Howdy everyone, this is Matt from DeadLantern.com's world-famous Splattercast. Now, when Jeff, DJ, Steve, and myself aren't discussing how Eisenstein's theory of dialectical montage provides a provocative counterbalance to the objective reality of Bazan's mise-en-scene in regards to George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead, we're making horror movies. Our latest film is called Outpost Doom, and it's available right now for the low price of $10, including free shipping. Outpost Doom is a story of two escaped prisoners who find shelter inside an old barn while being hunted by a giant tentacled monster. Once inside, they find a group of survivors who slowly realize that they are being hunted by something far more deadly than the monster outside. The film is a throwback to murder mysteries and horror films of the 30s and 40s. Eric from the Dark Hours podcast calls it, quote, Night of the Living Dead meets the Creeping Terror, unquote. So how do you get your hands on a glorious copy of this movie? Head on over to DeadLantern.com and order yours for the measly low price of $10, including that wonderful free shipping. DVD extras include deleted scenes, audio commentaries, and a documentary. Plus, you'll get a special handwritten note by none other than DJ himself. And if that doesn't entice you, consider this. Not only will you be helping to support indie filmmakers and a fellow podcast, but all proceeds go towards helping us make our newest film, Isabel, which is a gory slasher flick. So in effect, buying Outpost Doom makes you a de facto producer on our next film. How cool is that? Don't forget to visit DeadLantern.com to view a trailer for Outpost Doom and to purchase your very own copy. I thank you for your time, and we'll catch you on the Splattercast.
Welcome to episode 18 of the Zombie Girls podcast.
Woo!
Woo! 18! We're almost to 20. Who would have ever thought we would get this far?
Not me.
We're legal now.
We're barely legal.
Yeah, just barely. With me tonight on the podcast are my fabulous co-hosts, Lady Succubus.
Hello.
A.K.A. Summer. And the last girl, A.K.A. Ariel.
Hi, all.
And unfortunately, Brienne cannot be with us again tonight. She's going to be with us for the next episode. But in her place, we're introducing a very special guest and the latest extended Zombie Girls family.
I'm not really that special. Believe me.
Really, you should just like own it, girl.
If you say so.
So with us tonight is Lisa.
Hi.
Hey, Lisa!
That's in my apprehensive voice.
Don't worry, by the end of the show, she's going to be like the most opinionated one on here.
Only because I'll have had more vodka.
That's right. That's the key, though, right? Like, I talk you into coming on the show, and then I give you lots of alcohol, and then you just get, you know, you experience the fame and excitement of being a zombie girl, and then you can't ever leave.
She's kind of taking the summer route. You can end up talking about your boobs. Watch.
Oh.
Should we just get out of the way?
Yes. Are you-
okay. Yeah, I like my boobs. They're formidable.
Okay. So, formidable. Out of the way. And that is why we love Lisa, because of her formidable boobies. I don't know if I've ever had... We have to talk a little bit about something exciting that you and I did recently.
Yes.
You want to tell everybody about it?
Okay, so we recently guest hosted on Horrorphilia podcast, and we did a Killer Clown series.
Yes.
And awesome. It was tons of fun.
I would say that being on the show is tons of fun.
Okay, yes.
Watching the movies, not so much.
The movies were crap ass.
Yeah.
Okay, but hey, I'm the girl. I was gonna call myself a broad, but I won't say that. Okay, so I'm the girl that picked the Basket Case movie, so I'm not gonna hate on the movie that they picked. One of them I really, really enjoyed. One of them I just, if you guys listen to the Horrorphilia episode number 47.
Sure. I think it might be 48.
48. I apologize, you guys. It's 48. That's the wrong episode. 48. There's a reason why I cringe watching one of the movies.
Yeah, the director's a baby toucher.
And the kid is in the movie, which makes it really, really, really
crazy.
Hard.
Really real. They're from That's Martinez crazy. And Concord.
Yes. They're which Bay is, Area. Yeah. They're local.
Where you live, girl.
They're local.
Did you ever see Jeepers Creepers?
Yeah.
That's the direct, same
the director.
No. His name's Vincent.
He's a baby
Victor
catcher.
Salvo.
Yeah. Is that the one with the scary van? That...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the movie, he like touched the kid in the 12-year-old lead and like videotaped it.
Oh
was
my god.
Clown House. Yes.
Oh my god. Oh.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Pretty gross.
So, I had tons of fun on their podcast. Yep. I got a little too drunk maybe on their podcast. Sorry, guys. But I enjoyed myself a lot.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. So, definitely, if you guys haven't already checked that out or you aren't already fans of Orphelia, you should totally download that episode just so you can get a little more zombie goodness in you. All right, cool. So, So let's start off by talking about what we've been watching. Who wants to go first? Summer, you first. Okay. What have you been watching, girl?
Dun, dun, dun. For the first time, I have watched the movie Signs.
Ooh. Wow. I know people hate on that movie, but I am like, I like that movie too. Yeah, I will defend that movie to the end.
I actually liked it.
I love it.
I went in not knowing anything about it. Had no opinion, knew it was an M. Night movie. Was like, there's a good chance it's going to suck balls. But
too true.
I was like, totally into the movie. Like, I didn't move. Normally, I have a hard, I'm a little like ADD and I have a hard time sometimes concentrating. Sometimes I'll be like, Rachel, I need a break. Rachel, you know, or yeah. Like, I need a break. I was just like, stuck on the couch the whole time. I was really into it. I loved Joaquin Phoenix in that movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Maybe just because I love him.
I know. He's good.
But, I'm so glad he's not, like, total crazy pants and we're done with this stupid, like...
Is he over his...
What was that?
Yeah. It was for the documentary. It wasn't real. It was like, he's admitted that. He, like, went and apologized to David Letterman and stuff.
For his whole documentary. And he's going to do his hip-hop album and all that.
Yeah. Ugh. None of that shit was real. Thank God.
Thank God.
But, I love the little girl, Abigail.
Breslin.
Oh, my God. She's such awesome. A good little actress. The little boy was a good actor. Like, I thought all around it was, like, a really, really solid movie.
Yeah.
I did, like, it was a little slow. A little slow for me.
You have to, it's hard now, like, with Mel Gibson, you know what I mean? Because, like,
yeah.
Oops. I'm supposed to hate him, you know what I mean? And I actually really, like, you know what I mean? Like, hearing that definitely has colored the way that I see him. But he's so good in that. Like, mm-hmm. There's the part where M. Night Shyamalan, who can't stay out of his own fucking movies, is, like, talking about killing his wife. And his face does, like, the little, like, crumple up and cry that every time I see it, I bust a tear. I can't help it.
I like the first half of it, but...
You're one of those people that gets caught up logic.
I would watch it again to give it another chance. Maybe it was the mood that I was in. But the first half, I thought, was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You see... people running through the corn, you can't see them, it's all very like you can't see the monster, and then it's just it gets too silly for me after that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the CGI with the alien under is
the
weak.
He traps him in like the
well, he's trapped the in the
cupboard
pantry.
The pantry, yeah, it's like, what?
And see, I like that part when he was trapped.
Yeah,
in
me
the
too.
Like,
yeah,
I like
when
that.
He's like sliding up to the
part
door.
With the swing
yeah,
away.
It's
I'm
creepy.
Like, what?
Well,
come
yeah, that's
that
the
was
M. Night
really
thing.
Cheesy.
Yeah, I can go there with you. I mean, definitely, like M. Night's twists sometimes don't really work, but yeah. I felt like the performances were so strong, and I was so invested in each of the characters that I kind of can forgive some of the logic problems with it.
That's exactly how.
And
I
can forgive the bad CGI alien, mm-hmm. like the last. 2 minutes of the movie to me don't diminish the first 170. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I really like, and I thought the cinematography was beautiful, and like it like there was like I liked the weird thing about like them using the baby monitors to hear the aliens talking, and like you really felt like you kind of got that sense of these people that are paralyzed in something that's completely out of their control, you know. And yeah. So I will defend that movie to the end.
It does such a good job of like building up tension the whole way through, you know, like only showing you like little bits, and so it keeps getting, you know, the tension heightened and heightened and heightened.
Like when it leads up to that like last dinner where they're like, we're gonna have whatever we want, and they make pancakes and mashed potatoes.
I love that scene.
That was a great touch.
Yeah,
and then like, you know, I mean the pressure of the situation. And the priest having lost his faith and them, like, wanting him to say what they want to hear. I don't
That's
know.
That's another thing I didn't really get, though. Is he a priest? Because if he was a priest, he
wasn't a priest.
Kids.
He was a pastor.
He
could be Episcopal.
I was very confused. Maybe that's my problem.
Funny thing is, okay, so my roommate did not pay the cable bill.
Oh.
So we did not have
cable.
So we did not have cable for a couple days. So my good friend Jamil... Let me Signs and a few other movies. So I saw Wicker Man, the one with Nicolas Cage. With Nicolas Cage. And it was hard to watch it because there was a bunch of people over when I was trying to watch this. But
that's probably good. You need as much distraction from that.
Seriously, the whole time. Okay, so
the bees.
I was hanging out. We were all drinking, whatever. And everybody's like, what is this movie? What is going on in this movie? And then we see Nicolas Cage in this bear outfit. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I just know the ending that he's going to get burned. So I was like, can you fucking burn him already? Like, I was just did not like it. I could not get into the movie. I don't know if it was because
everybody... The movie's terrible.
Okay, it is terrible, right?
The original one is amazing.
Oh, you see there's a sequel coming out?
Oh, really?
The Wicker Tree. And it has...
Ooh, that's
cool. It has by the people who did the original Wicker Man. And it has Christopher Lee in it. I can't fucking wait. It's called The Wicker Tree.
That might be good.
I almost picked the teaser as our
I thought one you were going to say Christopher Walken is in it for a second.
Which would have been awesome, too, because he's awesome.
Yeah.
But that would be really weird. He's like, I'm not even going to try to do a Christopher Walken.
Man.
Yeah. Okay, you do it.
that's it.
And I started 1408.
Oh.
And it... I want to finish it.
It's good.
I was into it. I was like, this is a lot effing better than I thought it was going to be.
Is that the one with like Samuel L. Jackson? And yeah.
It's better than
it was. John Cusack.
Yeah. I thought from the ads it was going to be lame, but I went to see it in the theater anyways with my family, and I was really surprised at how good it was.
Don't spoil it for me.
No, we won't, but it was very entertaining.
There's that one point where you think you know where it's going, and you're like, oh, and then it twists on you again, and you're like, oh, thank God.
So it is a good movie, right?
Yeah.
Totally. I was like, wow, this is, like, getting good, you know?
I think it's really good PG-13 horror.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what definitely. I mean? Like, it's a good, if you want to, like, show a scary movie to someone who's not really into horror, 1408 is a good choice.
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it.
Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
Like, it's definitely not, like, you're not going to be, like, up biting your nails at 3 o'clock in the morning as a horror fan, but you'll definitely get a lot of enjoyment out of it, and it's something that you would not be embarrassed to share with someone else. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not handing
like
over a copy of Rabid. Like, check this out and see if you like horror.
Rabid is good.
But would you give it to a non-horror fan?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We can talk about that later.
And one last thing, and I'll be quiet from here on, is I saw Resident Evil again.
Oh,
I had
the original?
Go. Yeah. Resident Evil, what's this last one?
Afterlife.
Afterlife.
Yep.
I saw it again.
You went and saw it again?
Yeah.
And
did
you like it?
I haven't seen any of those.
I saw it without 3D this time.
You need the 3D,
you
right?
Need the it's made for 3D.
It's totally made for 3D.
You can tell.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, it looks bad in all 3D?
It's not the same as...
Well, okay. I'm going to go next because that was actually on mine, and we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Because you, myself, and Brianne went and saw it.
Yes.
It was, like, my birthday. You would have been invited.
I know.
You were out of town. So don't feel left out, because we would have totally have invited you. So we went and saw it, and I know there's a lot of hate for this franchise. And the way that I describe it is... Like, it is, for me and, like, my fellow girlfriends, sort of, like, the equivalent of, like, the mindless action movies that guys enjoy.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I enjoy action movies, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, that's what it is.
Them.
Yeah.
I just never have, you know, I've never watched them, but I would, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be adverse to them.
They're really entertaining.
Definitely totally brain candy. Very, in some
and
places,
Jovovich
derivative.
Looks hot when she's fighting
zombies.
She
very hot when she's fighting zombies.
What's not to like?
Exactly. They're just, I don't know, and they're just, like, fun. They're fun brain candy. And
yeah, and the action scenes are so good, and yeah, really, really fun.
And so we went and saw this in the theater in 3D because it's one of the movies that instead of having the terrible post conversion, it was shot with like the fancy James Cameron cameras or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like the real 3D. And it was gorgeous. Like there's a part at the beginning where like the girl is in Japan, like she's standing in the rain. And the rain, it's like, honestly, it's like it's like there was rain on your glasses.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's really like when the 3D is showcased in the movie, it's really kind of amazing and beautiful. Like the CGI feels like it's splashing you, like the blood is splashing you. You know, it's not perfect. It's one of these movies. If you're a fan of the first three movies going into this, you're going to get exactly what you want out of it. If you didn't like the first three, you're not going to like this one, because it's another one of them. And I personally enjoy them. So I really had a good time. Plus, like, multiple Milas. Yes,
please.
Totally. You can never have too
and
many.
The executioner is awesome. He's very Silent Hill. I mean, I know they had them in, you know, Resident Evil 5, the game. So it's actually taken, and, like, the zombies in that one are more like that, where they're the parasite ones that have, like, the things come out of their mouths, which is awesome in 3D, by the way. but the executioner scenes are awesome. I mean, it's totally like a, it's like a giant music video, but
it's actually, gorgeous. I like the characters in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of, I was hoping, what happened to Carlos? He was in 2 and 3 and he just wasn't there. Oh. I mean, was he, I guess maybe.
Carlos died.
Did he die in the third one? Yeah. I thought he got on the helicopter.
He lit the joint.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
I don't know why I whispered that.
I don't know why you whispered it either.
Everybody's seen that.
Anybody who's going to see it is already pretty much seen it.
He's the one who he lit the joint and boom.
Right. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
Okay. Yeah, Carlos died. For some reason, I thought he got on the helicopter at the end of the third one. All right. Sorry. Spoiler. You won't remember by the time you watch it.
I want to know what happened to the little girl, though, from the second one. With Nemesis.
Oh.
I would love to know what happened to her.
The Red Queen, right? Because remember, isn't she the basis of the Red Queen from the first movie? Because it's the guy with that wheelchair's daughter.
Yes, yes, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I would love to know what happened to her. What's going on with her.
I can't remember what popped off at the end of the third or the second one. Because I know some stuff happened on the plane.
Remember, there's a plane crash, and then they come and get her.
And then you remember these way better than I do. Way to go. That never happened.
I know. I had the worst memory ever, but.
You just fucking filed that shit away. So I really enjoyed that. I thought that was great. The other thing I watched, and I meant to talk about this in the last episode, but I just completely forgot, which is ridiculous because it would have been perfect for the last episode. And you saw this too, was Wreck 2.
Yes.
The sequel to Wreck. Have either of you guys seen Wreck?
No.
No, oh. I've been trying to see it for like ages, but
it's amazing. They remade it sort of.
Is that
W-R-E-C-K? Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. It's like the Spanish zombie movie. Well, I don't want to talk about it too much if you guys haven't seen it, because the second movie picks up right where the first one left off. I mean, like really right where the first one left off. Hmm. And kind of it takes in the last about 10 minutes of the first movie, it takes sort of a really interesting turn that is where the second one is really focused, and so I don't want to spoil that for you guys because it's really awesome.
And Wreck, as we all know, it's quarantine is the American
right, but it has quarantine. A different ending.
But it has a different ending, and quarantine sucked.
Quarantine's getting a sequel though. By the way, it's gonna be on a plane.
Yeah, how is that possible?
I don't know.
I don't even want to go there with it.
Yeah, you hated it that much, really. Or is it just
you
because
know
Wreck
I saw
was
Wreck
so
first?
Awesome.
I saw Wreck first. I wonder if I would have a different opinion if I had seen Quarantine first.
I didn't see Wreck first. I saw Quarantine first.
Really? And you hated it.
And I would.
Well, you didn't hate it. You just. The
just
ending
was
is
like.
So...
The ending, like, I was like, oh no, they did not go there. And yes, they did. I was quite disappointed in the ending. Like, I was. I love what's
Jennifer
her name?
Carpenter.
Jennifer Carpenter. Mm.
Yeah.
Her she's moments awesome. In that movie, great.
Mm-hmm.
She's looks generally terrified in that movie.
Nobody does like scared like Jennifer Carpenter.
Yeah, she's just awesome in every kind of way. But sorry.
We love you. Well, I mean, if you've seen the picture from the last episode, it's like Jennifer Carpenter's picture with like a big heart around it and like little cartoon hearts around
I
her
love
head.
You, Deb.
All right. So okay, so without spoiling it, I'll just say that Wreck 2 was one of the rare cases where I actually preferred the sequel. To the first
really?
Movie.
That's interesting.
You know, sequels are kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have a lot of, like, hopes pinned on them, especially if you're a fan of the first film. But I loved the second movie. It was genuinely frightening. Wow. Genuinely scary, suspenseful. There was, like, a little bit, like, they took a little bit from Aliens where they had, like, the helmet cams and stuff like that, which I liked. But I mean, like, if you haven't seen Wreck, you should check it out just so that you can see Wreck 2.
and if anybody's local, if you have Comcast, Wreck is now on demand.
Ooh, I'm going to watch it then.
It's on awesome. Demand.
All right,
and it just
message.
Recently Hell went yeah. on there. It just recently went on there.
All right, I'm watching that.
You're going to love
week.
It. Yeah. Good. It's really, I mean, the thing is, you've seen Quarantine. It's almost, it's very, very similar. It's almost shot for shot until the end. And you're really kind of watching it for the end.
Gotcha.
And then when, if you want, I'm totally down to watch Wreck 2 again if you want to come watch it with
Ooh,
me.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it's fucking good.
Okay.
Awesome. So then the very last thing, which is a great segue because Jennifer Carpenter, I got to see the first few episodes of season 6 of Dexter.
Mm. I'm so jealous.
Oh,
so
love that show.
Tonight.
Does it start tonight?
God damn it, I did not set it up to record.
But yeah, it's fantastic. It's definitely, I don't want to say for anybody who hasn't seen it, because it picks up right where season 5 left with, like, a major cliffhanger. And it's definitely, like, wrapping up the previous season. And then at the end of the 3rd episode is where you finally kind of see where this season's going. And it's got Julia Stiles this season, who I really like.
That's cool.
It's kind of cool to see her popping up.
Yeah, she's been, like, MIA she's a girl for a long time.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. She's good.
I mean, I've only seen her a little bit, but I like her. So okay. I'm saying, so she's good, not the character. I'm not the biggest fan
of hers, but...
No, I'm not either.
Well, this may be the thing that changes your mind, or it might not. It may be another, like... Hopefully she's not like... What was her name from the 2nd season? Dexter. With soulmates, Dexter.
Oh, yeah.
Lila.
Lila.
At least not another Lila.
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 Oh, well, I'm no, sorry. You did. My bad.
Lila.
Okay,
was she the AA one? Like, the
yeah.
May?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lila.
Have you guys talked about the True Blood finale yet?
I haven't watched it yet.
She hasn't seen it.
It's on my table, so you can't talk about it.
Okay.
You can't say nothing
about
it.
That's all
I've
been watching lately that, you know, horror genre related.
Okay, well, without spoiling anything, what did you think of the finale, Lisa?
I thought it was underwhelming. What part did you get up to?
I have gotten to... I'm like 2 episodes away, so she knows what she is.
Which is really stupid.
Yeah, in her own words,
Do you guys know?
Yeah, I've seen every episode.
Okay,
yeah.
Fairies?
I know. I knew it from the book, and I was hoping they were going to do something different with the show because they've done so much different things with the show. So, like, when they started leaning that way, as soon as I saw Claudine in the, like, magic fairyland, I was all, boo.
I think I died a little inside.
Yeah. But, like, I like that it's self-aware enough, at least for her, to include in dialogue that
it's makes
lame.
It better, you know?
A little bit, but still, it's like, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
But hopefully maybe they'll do something more interesting with it than they did in the books, because, like, that's kind of where the books kind of went off the rail for me. Like,
yeah. Well, I really liked the whole Russell Edgington thing, and I loved when he got on TV.
Oh,
snapped the spine out of some guy and was like, no, the weather. And they didn't follow that up at all. I thought there was going to be this huge, you know, vigilante uprising of humans against vampires on the streets, and there's nothing like that. The whole werewolf thing, there was nothing like that.
True Blood is really good about, like, dropping seeds and then picking them up later. Because remember the very first season, they hinted at the whole, like, Fellowship of the Sun, and, like, you got the sense, like, that it was going to go somewhere, and then it just didn't. But then the next season, it became, like, a major plot point. So maybe that'll be the case. I mean, because here's the thing is, they crammed the, like, almost entire plot of the 3rd book into, like, the first 4 or 5 episodes of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, like...
I thought the season was really good up to a certain point. And then maybe the last 3 episodes, I just...
A little weaker.
And I liked the way it ended.
Really?
I did.
Well, I mean, I think the thing to remember, though, is that it's not a series finale. It's just a season finale.
Yeah.
So if it's a low point, it's disappointing because we have to wait a year. But it's you got to remember there's going to be more. So there's still hope that it'll, like, pick back up.
I just felt like they brought in too many characters.
Well, it definitely leaves you hanging, of course, as to, like,
that's what it says. The best is
yes.
Powerful beginning, powerful ending of every episode. One of the season was the Russell Edgington on the news.
That could have been the finale.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen the ending. I'm not going to look at you when I say this, but I'm hoping they don't kill him off too fast because he's such a great character that I want to see more of him.
Definitely. He's great.
And everything he did was, like, so creepy, but infused with this, like, amazing dark humor. And that's what I think he's, like, kind of a reflection of the series as a whole, because that's what the show does so well, is it's rooted in, like, in genre, but it there's such a great dark humor to it.
Well, it's totally over the top, and it knows that it's over the top, so.
Yeah, I love it.
It's fun.
Favorite character, fun Lafayette.
Lafayette. I agree with you. Lafayette's my favorite.
I didn't really enjoy the Lafayette arc, though.
So in the show, they don't kill him off like they do in the book?
No. That's Lafayette's nice. Still around.
And I love him character. In the book, and I just started, like, I'm reading the 2nd book now, and I was so disappointed that he dies at the beginning. I was like, fuck, he was awesome.
No, he's like a main character throughout the series.
That's good. Because, like, I haven't really watched
it. For any reality TV show fans who have watched I Love New York, yes, I'm going to put this out there. Buddha, who was, like, the runner-up for I Love New York, who was going to get with New York, is in True Blood for, like, 10 seconds.
Serious?
Yes. Oh, that's crazy. I don't know how I spotted him. What I was like watching it. I just happened to look at the right place on the screen. I was like, that's Buddha.
He's just like an extra.
Yeah.
That's so random. Have you watched the first season? Have you watched that in Glee?
No.
Oh my god. I couldn't believe that he was on there. One of the guys in Fantasia.
I haven't watched True Blood.
Just hanging out with a bunch of goth makeup on. It's really funny.
That's awesome. Okay, so that's. Do you have any what you've been watching?
Well, yeah, I've been like super, super busy lately, so I haven't watched very many movies. And when I admit to what I'm about to admit to, I'm going to get like the steely eyes of death from Rachel. But I actually never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer before.
Oh, you know what? I'm not going to give you steely eyes because honestly, I'm jealous because you are getting to experience
That's
it.
That's true.
And like,
you get to be.
Yeah.
You get to experience this wonderfulness. The magic. For a first time.
And so, like, a friend of mine bought me, like, you know, the whole series.
Good friend. Keep that friend in your life.
I'm already on, like, season 5, because I'm just, like, watching it. Oh, like, I can't stop watching it. It's so good.
Awesome.
Oh, love it.
Spike. Awesome.
So good. Spike?
I love
What's your
Spike.
Favorite episode so far?
Love Spike. You know, I just watched the silent episode. That was really Hush. Good.
Oh, so good. So good.
Those guys, the way they moved.
The gentleman or something?
Yeah,
the
gentleman.
Dream episode
so
is my
creepy.
Favorite one. The last episode of season 4, Restless, when they're all, it's all their dreams.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you gotten to Once More with Feeling yet? The musical episode?
She's only on season 5.
I don't remember which episode
That's
it was.
That's in season 6.
Oh, the musical episode.
No, I haven't seen that one yet. Worst episode ever, though.
Sorry.
The one where she was like a caveman from the beer that she
That is
drank.
A terrible
It's
episode.
Like the worst episode ever. So, yeah.
Everybody always wants to skip that episode when they watch
I mean,
it with their friends
funny,
for the first
but,
time.
Like, yeah, I was just like, wow.
Which season wow. is it where it's the geeks in the van that are her nemesis?
Season 6.
So it's the next one? They were my favorite nemesis.
Shh, spoilers!
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, season 5 is the one with, like, the Institute and everything. And Riley.
Oh, God, with Riley?
Hey, okay. Oh, thank God. I'm not the only one that hates Riley.
No one likes Riley.
Everyone hates
thank
Riley.
God.
It is so funny.
Joss Whedon even admitted
it. Joss Whedon admits it. Like, in my interview Sweet. With him, like, we were talking about, like, we were talking about, like, another character, a romantic character, whatever, that gets killed, and it's, like, one of those things that, like, enrages Buffy fans and like, okay. like try to replace this person but they just you can't and he was I was like why do you always have to kill off the characters and he was like well everyone says you know like why can't they be happy I gave you Riley and nobody liked that
because he's that fucking example. Boring
he's yeah
he's plastic Ken doll guy who does nothing and is boring as hell
did you enjoy it are you into it
oh I love it that's what I'm saying like it's so much fun I can't stop watching it. Like, that's why I've been watching it for, like, just a few weeks. I'm already in, like, season 5, you know?
Pretty soon yeah. you're going to be on the comic books.
Yeah.
You're like, it's season 8?
I know.
You're a big disappointment.
Really? Yeah. I haven't read the comics.
But you should read Frey. It's the comic that's set in the future. It's sort Ooh, of like
it's a
Buffy.
Slayer of
it's
the
like
future.
Buffy
oh, cool.
plus Firefly. It's
okay.
I wish that Joss Whedon would develop Frey into a series. Cause
I do too, because she's a great character.
I'm sorry, I have one more thing to say about what I watched.
Oh, okay.
I finally watched the rest of Zombie Strippers, like some listener said I should try to finish.
Okay.
And it still sucks balls.
Okay.
So I forgot. Well, I there was a guns. Couple people who told me, get to the end of it. No. It's not
just
any
no.
better.
It stays sucky.
It stays sucky. Sorry.
Okay.
I had to put that out there.
All right. So are you guys ready to talk some trailers?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So the first one we watched was for Case 39. So I'm going to go ahead and roll the trailer now.
How many active cases you got?
38. What are they doing to you?
Child Services?
My name's Emily.
Lily.
You know I can help.
They hate me. They go into the cellar.
This little girl heard her parents say they're going to send her to hell.
I'm scared.
Lily!
What she needs right now is a safe, supportive environment. I think that I can provide that for her.
Do you live alone?
Just me. Just us.
She's starting to come out of her shell. You can't undo 10 years of trauma in 6 weeks.
Lily, are you okay?
I can hear them. I went by the house.
Her mom
mom and dad had deadbolts on their bedroom door.
People die around her. Not by her own hand. They just die.
Tell me what's going on.
He was killed last night.
Slaughter would be a better word. Scared. Not of me.
Okay, so ladies, what did you think of this movie? Okay, let's first of all, let's kind of talk a little bit about what it is. From what I can tell from the trailer, it is Renee Zellweger. Oh, the plastic surgery.
I know.
The plastic surgery is so distracting.
Some people are ruining themselves with plastic surgery.
But anyway, so she is a Child Protective Services employee agent. I don't know what
it's
you would call them.
Social service.
What do you call those? Workers?
Social workers, yeah.
Okay.
That's what she is.
So she's been called into a house where there is this little girl who it appears to be in, this very abusive situation. She tells them, my parents say they want to kill me and send me to hell. And so she's being, locked away and stuff like that. So she steps in as a part of the, Renee Zellweger steps in as the state and decides to take the child home. She takes the child home, and then demonic-y things start happening, and she starts investigating, and it looks like maybe the child wasn't the victim after all. So that's my interpretation of
what
I saw. I know. From the mind
the child
of M. Night
Shyamalan. Evil. She will kill you.
And it was a little girl from Silent Hill. Did you guys catch that?
No, I didn't.
Yep. All right, so what do you guys think?
I wasn't, super into it, but I think it'll be entertaining. It had touches that kind of reminded me of, The Ring or something.
Mm-hmm.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Which made me kind of, want to see it just because I like The Ring.
Ring's great.
Yeah. But, like you were saying, Lisa, the plot is, a fairly... Yeah. At least from what they showed, is pretty predictable. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it's not going to be, kind of a disappointed twist ending. But, I don't know. I would see it still.
Well, the real horror is that she can't make a facial expression.
Yeah.
That is a horror movie.
I was going to say, what's going to kill that movie, I'm sorry, is going to be Renee's.
You really need to be able to...
Emote,
yeah, with your
yeah,
face.
Yeah, no, it's a horror movie.
I was just reading this article. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just reading this article, and Jamie Lee Curtis was talking about how there's this conspiracy in Hollywood and with plastic surgeons that they have placed this expectation on you that you have to get these things done. You mm-hmm. have to get the injectables. And you have to get the Botox. And she's just refusing to do it. You know, she's
good
these
her.
People are becoming
Jamie
Lee Curtis.
Okay.
And she looks
that's awesome.
Damn good.
Oh, she does. And she hasn't had anything
and
done.
And her, have you seen her body?
Yeah. No,
I mean,
she looks great.
Yeah,
I mean, she's a woman.
Great.
She's a middle-aged woman. She does, your body changes.
Yeah,
but
she's
instead
not perfect, but she's
beautiful.
She's
embracing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's even done those, photo shoots where they don't do any touch-ups, so you can see, what
she looks
really
great.
Looks like.
Yeah.
Yep. And I just think that's great, because I do think that there is this expectation, and this insane kind of peer pressure around it.
Yeah.
And what happens is, it's grotesque.
It is.
You know what I mean? And you only have to watch an episode of The Real Housewives of the OC to how unnatural these things look. It isn't youthful. It's
It actually just makes you look freaky. I think the right word is uncanny.
Yeah.
What's
the
that
uncanny
thing?
Valley?
The uncanny valley.
Yes.
That's what it goes into.
You're on the nose. You're totally right. That's exactly what it is. It's like we're taking humanity
just
pushing it into the uncanny valley.
Yeah. Before that, it was Freud. He wrote about the uncanny. It's basically like something that's similar but also dissimilar at the same time.
Yeah.
So if something's human-like but not human, like a doll yes. can be uncanny, or a clown. Clowns are uncanny.
Yes.
So it sort of taps into like the certain fear that people have.
But back to the movie.
Yeah.
I Good believe job. Bradley Cooper's in it. So on that note, I might have to see it just for Bradley Cooper because I'm with I you heart on that. Him.
Are you guys in the cult of the coop? Like, are you into Bradley Cooper?
Oh my God, yes.
Really?
Yes. I'm not into guy actors. Like, I'm just like, none of them just do it for me where I'm just like, that's the one. For some reason, Bradley Cooper, after I saw him in The Hangover, I was just like...
You're like, I'd hit it.
He's a little... I'm sure how bad that sounds very bad. Come on, we're all human here. Okay, I think Bradley Cooper's hot. But the movie, though, it like Ariel said, it just reminded me of The Ring, of having the little girl, you know, something around her, you want to say possessed, or the devil around her, whatever. It just really reminded me of The Ring.
Yeah,
that's the first thing that clicked in my head.
Yeah, it seemed to have that same kind of atmosphere
yeah.
to it. And so if that's true, then I would kind of be interested. But, like, I'm not jumping out of my seat like, oh, my God, I have to see it.
So you think you're going to see it?
I don't know that I would see it in the theater, honestly.
I'll How see it you? In the theater just for Bradley Cooper. If I
Damn. It's a Netflix watch instantly for me.
Yeah. Okay, so then... Do we want to talk about our other trailer?
Of course.
This movie comes from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan ding dong.
All right, so let's roll it.
Everyone groaned when they saw my name. I don't understand.
Maybe people don't like your movies anymore?
No. It has to be something else. I mean The Sixth Sense.
You're a genius, M. Night Shyamalan.
There's plenty more where that came from.
To the mind of M. Night Shyamalan!
Hear, hear.
It's like when people see my movies, they're disappointed.
Your movies are based on twists, and even those have started to suck.
What's happening to me?
You're becoming less popular?
Impossible.
Possible.
68%, 18%, 8%. There has to be some kind of pattern.
Yeah, down? The pattern is down?
No, it's something to do with the AIDS.
M. Night, I love Lady in the Water.
Oh, thank you. Did I imagine I had fans? I feel like I'm losing my mind of M. Night Shyamalan. It's like people don't even recognize me.
Really? You put yourself in all of your movies.
I know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Shyamalan. We don't have a table for you.
Do you know who I am?
I just said Mr. Shyamalan.
Excuse me, table 8 has Rotten Tomatoes.
You're the only person I can trust.
Did you even see the happening? I mean, trees? Really?
Not you too! Not you too!
Shyamalan.
My career is dying.
Your career's been dead the whole time.
Okay, so what did you guys think? Is this a movie? Obviously, it's a spoof. Of, like, from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. But is this a movie you guys would like to see get made?
Hell yes.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, God, it was hysterical. And so exactly what needs to be said right now about M. Night Shyamalan. Like, it said everything I want to say about him.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
I just wish, you know, like, he would fulfill the promises that he had before. Like, I mean, I'm, like, laughing along, and it's fun to hate on M. Night. Like, that's the thing to do now. But they're calling him out on all the reasons that makes him seem like a douche nozzle. But, you know, like, there was so much promise there. I would be the first one to be back on the bandwagon if he put out another Signs or something.
I'm with you on that.
You know, totally I feel kind of bad for him in a way, though.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, I do. I think he just tried, you gotta admit, The first couple movies were fucking mind blowing.
Yeah. They were good. They were enjoyable.
The Sixth Sense.
Uh-oh. We have a dissenting opinion.
Okay. Well, to me, like, The Sixth Sense, I was just like,
it's a great movie.
Yes.
I thought it was a great movie. I think he might, I don't know him personally. It's not like me and M. Night kick it every day. So, but I think possibly he got a little big headed there and just tried to put too much out too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really think he needs to take some, like, time off and come up with some fresh ideas. And I don't know if somebody's feeding him some ideas, but, like, his last few movies just, I mean...
I just think he needs to go back and take a look at his craft. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Go back and, like, look at the kind of amazing cinematography he brought to something like Signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the slow pans between the two characters as they're, you know, like, taking in the scenery and stuff. Like, you don't get any of that anymore.
I think he just tried to do too much to make it too crazy. Just tell a good story. Just tell a good story like you did. And he can do it.
What about you, Missy?
Oh, would I see that movie?
Yes.
If it were a real movie?
Yeah.
Hell yes. I would see it. It would be great.
And what are your thoughts on the M. Night Shyamalan backlash?
I really have not enjoyed any of his movies except for The Sixth Sense. Unbreakable, I thought was interesting, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed Signs.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't get into Signs. And then after that, I sort of gave up on him.
Everything I think I'm the only one here that liked The Village.
Like, more awful.
I liked The Village.
No, I actually kind of liked it, too.
I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it.
I didn't see it, so I can't say.
I know Rachel doesn't like it, and I know a lot of people who don't like it. Yeah.
I know other people, too, who like it. My friend Melinda likes it. I was just like, word?
Yeah.
but that's my opinion. And, like, we have to remember that, like, these are just our opinions. It's so easy to be like, it's fact, you know?
Yeah.
But it is just our opinion.
But then again, how many people have made crap-ass movies?
Hell of people.
I said, I would rewatch Signs.
You should.
I would give it another chance because it might have just, you know, been where I was at that time. It was a long time ago. I saw it in the theater, and I haven't seen it since.
Do you find that it's hard for you to buy into movies? Like, if it doesn't capture you right away...
I feel like I really liked the way the movie was going for the first half, and then I think I was disappointed with the direction that it took.
Mm-hmm.
And had I sort of known that was going to happen, I probably would have received it in a different way. But
word,
yeah, it became really silly and campy, and I wasn't really expecting that because I was expecting more of like a Sixth Sense type of movie, mm-hmm. and also like. The whole alien thing. I was really into the whole alien thing at that time. I'd like read Communion and...
and see, with that movie, I really love the scene when they're watching the news and I believe it's in like Mexico or something like that. And the kids are at the birthday party.
And they see and it moving.
Like, I thought that was so cheesy.
I thought that was good.
I liked it.
Okay,
I think
alien
it either works
wasn't
for
the best
you or
alien.
It doesn't. Like there are some things that just they work or they don't. And I think for me, those kinds of things where you get a hint of what it is really work for me.
Oh, I like hints, but that was just too much. Actually seeing it for so much, having so much screen time, it took away
all the fear
that I had for it.
It was grainy.
Mm.
So I felt like I didn't get a good look at it. And
then
when I did, it was...
I'm not a huge Alien fan movie.
You're not a fan movie?
Fan.
Alien movie fan.
I'm on my third vodka and something in 2 beers.
Didn't we learn on the Horrorphilia podcast? Yeah. You get cut off after 2. All right, so let's move on.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Mm-hmm. So tonight we're going to be talking about David Cronenberg's 1977 film, Rabid.
All around her, people are dying. And only Rose knows why.
You gotta come quick. You gotta come quick and get me.
It's Rose. It's gotta be. Something's happened to Rose.
Health officials closed the plant. Health officials have said they consider the outbreak of the new strain of rabies as being potentially the worst of this century.
Don't scream. Don't panic. He's dead. And the dead can't hurt the living. Rabid.
The Prime Minister was reluctant to officially declare a state of emergency,
But as any citizen in the streets can tell you, martial law has come to Montreal.
Get that gun.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't go through. I'm sorry, sir.
Don't push.
Don't have
leave
time.
Down, please.
Shooting down the victims is as good a way of handling them as we have got.
Stop! Stop or I'll shoot!
You can't trust your mother. Your best friend. The neighbor next door. One minute, they're perfectly normal. The next, rabid. Pray it doesn't happen to you. Rabid.
Okay, so who would like to start with a... Well, let me just break down first a little bit about Rabid. Okay, so Rabid, which is also known as Rage, is from 1977 and is written and directed by the infamous body horror master himself, David Cronenberg. The film stars Marilyn Chambers, who is, as Rose, who is the infamous... Porn star. Yes, most people know her from her.
Did you know that he wanted Sissy Spacek originally?
Really? Yes,
for the role. Hmm.
He wanted Sissy Spacek, but
and then
was...
Carrie came out during production, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he wanted her, but the producers, which included Ivan Reitman, which is so funny because you think like Ghostbusters and this are very different kind of films. And they like put the kibosh on that casting because she had freckles and because of her Texas accent, and they wanted with more sex appeal. But then as they were filming, Carrie comes out and it's like this massive fucking hit, and they're like, ooh,
bad choice.
But it did work out well because they got a lot of press for, you know, for casting Marilyn Chambers because she was in the girl behind or the Behind the Green Door. That's what it's called. Like, the girl with the dragon tattoo. Although that is a good movie. So what were we saying? Okay, so yeah. So it stars Marilyn Chambers and Frank Moore who, as her boyfriend. His name is Hart. And he is totally... Did you guys totally get, like, the super Christopher Walken clearance rack vibe?
Yes. Totally. Totally. I didn't even think about that until you said it. But yeah, that's exactly...
He totally looks like Christopher Walken.
Dead on.
Yeah. Okay, so
is that like Nordstrom rack, or
yeah, it's like the Nordstrom rack. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. It's like clearance rack. It's like kind of like off
it's kind
brand.
Of like the Didi discount store version.
Okay, true.
Just for walking late.
Yes, definitely. So, first of all, I think it's important to say that this movie was recommended by our guest host, Lisa.
Thank you, Miss Lisa.
Who apparently is very into armpit cock. I don't know. It's just her thing, I guess.
I just love David Cronenberg.
So, okay, who wants to break down sort of a, like, a basic synopsis?
Well, I think we should definitely let our guest host.
Oh, no.
Lisa,
okay.
No?
This is one she didn't get a chance to rewatch it.
I did not actually get a chance to rewatch it because I had sort of
a... someone else.
Busy, but I mean, I could give. But...
Ariel, you look, I heard you clear your throat. Go for it.
Yeah. But, again, Rachel will interrupt me at some point, so just be watching out for that, everybody.
That doesn't sound like me at all. Oh, wait, I just did it.
Ooh. Okay, so I'm just going to give, like, a real basic description of it. But the movie starts out where you're seeing this, like, hospital that seems to work mostly in, like, plastic surgery. Like, odd conversations in this hospital where it looks like they're talking about maybe some procedures that are, like, you know, beyond the norm for plastic surgery at this time. And then it cuts to this family, like, on a family vacation in their van, driving down the street, like, desolate road in the countryside or whatever, and their car breaks down, and it, like, blocks this road, and then there's this guy and a girl on a motorcycle, like, driving hella fast, and obviously they don't see the car in time, and go, like, flying off the road. And then the motorcycle ends up, like, blowing up. Mm-hmm. So this hospital sends out, like, an ambulance to pick up the girl. And she has, like, you know, really bad burns and all this stuff on her body. And they take her in to do surgery at the hospital. And her boyfriend's taken in too, but he's like not very injured. She's like comatose, and he just has like a problem with his shoulders and I think his hand or something. And so they perform surgery on her where they basically do like skin grafts where they take skin from like her thigh and put it like in her armpit and other places on her body.
Yeah.
And then she's, you know, comatose for a really long time, and for like a month or so before she wakes up and weird shit starts happening.
Yeah.
Where basically she's like got a hunger for people, kind of.
But while they're doing the skin graft, I believe the doctor touches on how this is going to be experimental.
Yeah,
he says genetically neutral tissue.
Yeah, he says that it's a little bit. That it can sort of like this tissue can turn into anything,
and which is really interesting because it ended up being ultimately kind of prescient in that. You know, this is way before stem cell research, but that's basically what he's getting at, is that by going through this process, it's able to take on the characteristics of the skin around it.
It's not like
thigh skin and on her breasts.
Right.
And actually it becomes breast, like, skin tissue.
It becomes living tissue of the breast, basically, which you just said.
Yeah.
And realistically, why wouldn't they take the broad to a real hospital a month later? Like,
it was too far away, I guess.
Like, too far away. If I was
going... And his name is Dr. Keloid.
I'm not going to get into it. I'm sorry.
Oh, right. His name is Dr. Keloid. So, like, wait, Keloid.
What was it?
The name of the doctor.
Yeah.
Which is, like, scar tissue. So, that was pretty funny.
But, I mean, it's kind of creepy. Like, the doctors in the hospital are a little off. Like, don't they just feel that way when they're talking? Like, there's something a little off with
them? Well, I do feel like, and it's sort of something that's present in a lot of Cronenberg films, is, like, the scientists are kind of the evil. You know what I mean? Like, they sort of take the place of, like, someone who would be, like, more like a witch. You know what I mean? Like, sort of like the spiritual equivalent of that would be the doctor or the scientist.
See, I don't really think that they're evil. I just think that they're very, like, they're portrayed as very cold and detached from humanity.
But you're right. I wouldn't say evil, but they're sort of, like, the source of the...
Definitely.
You know what I mean? And so, like...
Yeah, they want this new technology, and they're willing to do it no matter sort of the cost. Like, they don't think about the cost to, you know, the human life or whatever.
Okay, continue.
Yeah. Anyway, so this broad, like, she's got, you know, the skin graft, and she wakes up and basically attacks this doctor at the hospital in a really odd way. And she attacks a couple different people, and what's that?
Did you mention that it's an armpit?
We haven't seen it. You hadn't seen it
yet.
It hasn't been shown
That's
yet.
What I was just about
she
to
just
say.
She just sort of grabs them into this, like, embrace.
Yeah, and you kind of can't see exactly what's going on. And she attacks a couple people where you don't really see exactly how it happens. You see her, like, hug the person really tight, and there's some, like, sexual energy there.
It's definitely very, like, erotic.
Yeah.
Like,
very erotic.
It almost is like, even though you know that they're being attacked, it almost looks like...
orgasm.
Yeah, it looks like orgasm, kind of. And, like the way that she holds them to her and, like, touches their hair, and they're, like, shuddering in her arms. It looks very, very orgasmic.
And then when she lets go, you see that, like, they're bloody, you know?
Yeah.
But you don't exactly see what's happened until later when you realize... Do you want to describe, like, what you see? I'm not sure even how to describe it. Like, what's up with her armpit?
Basically, there's this little, like, hole almost, and it's like, how would you describe it?
I wouldn't say it looks like a hole so much as there's something very vaginal about
this. Yeah, it looks like basically like she has a vagina in her armpit.
But then a penis type thing comes out of it.
Yeah, right. So it opens up, like, and like this weird penis thing comes out, and then the tip of the penis, like a weird nail. Little sword thing.
It's like a little stinger.
Yeah, like a stinger. Exactly. And that's what she, like, attacks people with. This thing comes out.
And that's due to the specially treated, like, tissue.
Yeah.
Somehow. Like, it's basically...
The morphogenetic tissue.
So, basically, it's sort of, like, mutated and has... And she's now no longer can, like, eat food.
Yeah, every time she eats, like, a hamburger or anything, it smells, like, really good to her and she wants it, but then she ends up throwing up. Like, she cannot handle it. And then she starts craving... you know, basically, like, this, you know, doing this to people. So, like, she has to do it. And once she has, like, attacked them with her vagina, penis, armpit thing.
That's sort of like the turducken of, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
Of, like, killing apparatus.
You did not say turducken.
And, you know what I mean?
Yes, no, I know. It's like one, you know, a duck inside a chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I know what I'm making for this Thanksgiving.
No kidding.
But once she's attacked these people, like, they don't die. They become, like, rabid. Like, they foam at the mouth, and mm-hmm. they kill, too, after.
It's like a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of an interesting mixture of vampire, like, a modern urban vampire
totally, because
story.
She has sort of the, like, you relate to her in the same kind of way that you would relate to a vampire. I mean, she can't help, you know,
yeah, she can't
urge
really control
that she has.
And she has no idea what's
blood
going on
or
with
whatever
her.
It is that she, you know, gets from her armpit. Phallus thing.
Yes. But, the turducken.
And Ariel's right. She does not realize what she's doing to people.
She's sort of like in a fugue state at first while
right.
she's doing it.
She doesn't really have a memory. Like, she kind of wakes up and doesn't really understand or remember what exactly she's done. You know, but she keeps doing it. And then you've got all these, like, rabid people going around.
Yeah.
And it starts to show up on the news. And they think that there's been, like, this huge outbreak in the city of rabies. And
you could definitely feel kind of a 28 days later
totally.
Vibe from
totally.
It because the people they become at first they're fine and then they become comatose almost and like but then they become really violent,
they get the rage
and then
yeah
you know like they're transmitting this like rabies sort of like virus through the saliva, so it's very zombie-esque.
Yeah.
So
they bite somebody and then the person ends up with the same disease.
It's like this really interesting sort of scientific take on these, you know, vampires and zombies, you know what I mean, like these really like major staples of the horror genre, but through like the weird like scientific Cronenberg lens.
Yeah. And throughout the movie, the guys that she ends up killing, like, a lot of them are kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
They're all perverts.
They're all perverts who kind of want to take advantage. Like, the very first person that she attacks, you know, she wakes up out of her coma after she's had surgery and everything. That's right. It was another patient. And he comes into her room, hears her screaming, and she's, like, flailing all over the place. And she, like, rips her gown off, and her breasts are just out there, right? And instead of, like, covering her up and, like, getting a doctor, she kind of grabs, like, doesn't want him to leave. And he, like, kind of gets off on, like, holding her.
But he's
until
like, this is weird.
This is weird.
Which is, like, the most honest
but
thing in the whole
same
movie.
I know. He's holding her.
Yeah.
Of course, though. I mean,
you know?
Like, she's
and
not,
she's, like, kind of gyrating on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, later she, like, ends up in a barn where she's kind of, like, attacking a cow laying on the ground.
Well, she tries to do the cow blood thing, but, like, she gets violently ill.
Right. And,
which I think was an important kind of thing to touch on, like, why is she, like, because it keeps her from being, like, a true villain, because she's not, like, choosing to kill and spread this disease to humans.
Exactly. She can't help it. It's
but just, that's her only source of
which
food.
Is sort of like the vampire thing, you know, when you have the good vampire who can't really.
Clearly, you've never heard
else?
Of the excellent Twilight saga.
I wasn't really thinking of Twilight.
Boo. Yeah, Cronenberg doesn't really conjure up Edward Cullen for me.
No, I wasn't saying that at all.
But anyway,
still haven't seen a Twilight movie. I'm so
excellent. Yes. You're awesome. But anyways, after she attacks or, you know, tries to drink the blood from this cow, like, this really creepy, drunken farmer guy comes to try to, like, take advantage of her, kind of. And she ends
Summer's
up
boyfriend.
Doing the same thing to him.
Totally my boyfriend.
I have so many boyfriends.
I, like,
in
I looked at her, I was like, the boyfriend's very aggressive,
boyfriend.
Summer.
Yeah. That's the way I like him.
Like, she grabs him and basically, like, that's the only time you get a really, like, you can see, like, how quickly the thing can move. Like,
yeah,
really
and you really, that's
like
the first time you get a good look at it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So continue, sorry.
Well, I mean, that's basically what happens. It's the premise of the movie, and then it's sort of like her boyfriend is kind of trying to find her and trying to help her, and she's trying to get help, and... But she really, you know, there's nothing she can do. She just has these cravings and she has to sort of go with it. Do you want to talk about the ending?
Right? Well, I think it's important to talk about how, like, there's two parallel stories going on. There's right. her story of where we're watching her, you know, like, kind of going out and, like, seeking out food and kind of going to, like, maybe some dodgy places, like yeah, porn theater and stuff exactly. like that.
But oh, then God, the that guy in the porn that, theater was really creepy.
Yeah, he was really creepy. Really he, like, creepy. Came and, like, touched her face. I was like, oh, he gets what he gets, as far as I'm concerned. Uh-huh. When you, like, unsolicited face touching is a death sentence, dude, yeah. as far as I'm concerned.
In the middle of a porno theater? Like, yeah, come on, creepy, that's so creepy, creepy.
But then there's also sort of this, like, George
Romero. Do you think there was any, like, meta things going on there with them being a porn theater and her being a porn star? And
you know, I read this interview with Cronenberg, and he says no. But at the same time, it's kind of like maybe not intentionally, but I think you have to
still
you have to talk about the commentary that maybe was not intended, but that sort of just as a byproduct mm-hmm. of it. You know what I mean? And I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I guess.
I thought you were going somewhere with it. I'm setting you up. Sorry.
I was just wondering. You know, maybe I think that. I mean, if he says that he didn't intentionally do that, then probably he didn't intend to, but it seems like, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
I think though that like when we're talking about films and things like that, you can't just rely on what is intended.
No,
you know what definitely. I mean? Like a lot of times there's unexpected commentary that comes out of something that, you know, maybe more profound, and it actually speaks to, like, a greater, like, you know, like, it's, like, a greater commentary on, like, the culture at that time.
Yeah, well, it's just, like, literary analysis. I mean, once the writer writes something and it's published, it no longer belongs to them. It mm-hmm. belongs to the public. And so what they intended, while that sort of, like, colors some of how you view the book, it isn't just about them anymore. It's the way you see the book, the way mm-hmm. that the, you know, what's happening societally at that time colors the way you interpret the themes and all of that. It's like, it doesn't matter just what the author or the director intends. It's mm-hmm. what you see in it.
Yeah. It belongs to the audience.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly.
So what I was going to say was that, well, we have this like a story of following her and her discovery of like this mutation that's happening and her having to feed or whatever. There's mm-hmm. also like this very like Romero-esque pandemic
yes.
that's
yes.
like happening in the background. It's happening definitely. On TV screens, which is very like Dawn of the Dead.
Yes. Oh yeah. And you see it all over the news on all the TV stations. Yeah.
There was one scene that I'm sorry.
No, please.
There was one scene that I actually really liked was there was one guy, I don't know where he's from, he had an accent. He was on TV and he was saying how this is turning into an epidemic. He was like, but this is not swine flu.
Yeah.
And it was so funny to me to hear in 1977, yeah. swine flu.
We still haven't figured this shit out.
What was it, last year or 2 years ago, people were freaking out about the swine flu.
That's funny.
So I was just like, damn, really? Like, it kind of caught me off guard. And I think somebody had pointed that out and I just was like, oh, you know,
yeah.
How
like
long is
mass
that?
Hysteria.
Yeah, it's just like okay, they're talking about swine flu back then, but when it came out 2 years ago, people are like, "What's the swine flu? What's everybody die?" You know, I like that,
and it also kind of contemporizes it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like it's easy to look at the grain and the unfortunate male turtleneck wearing and kind of write it off as
the
something
true horror of the
movie. Yeah, the true horror of the film is seriously like the hair pieces. There is like, I don't know what the comb over count was in the movie, but they were
multiple
comb over offenders.
The guy in the mall, his hair,
the guy in the hospital with the guy with who was wearing a white turtleneck, I have to say, had like a comb over that started like in 1964 and like made its way to today. Like it's like a double rainbow
it
of comb overness. Yes, yes, it is the mighty Boosh. We travel through
totally.
Time and space. But I don't remember what my point was, but so
yeah,
I got these two like you know stories going on at
yeah.
the same time.
Right, right.
And they even like reference the Black Plague and all of that, like in the interviews with reporters.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So basically, I think what you're like really hinting on is you see what she's going through, and at the same time, you see what the whole. It's in Canada, so you see what like they're going through, the whole town, and how they're trying to clean up this, and how they have garbage trucks. Like, they're shooting people mm-hmm. and throwing people in the back of garbage trucks and crushing the bodies as soon as somebody gets dead. You know, they're spraying off cars as soon as the blood gets on there. So it was definitely, like, you totally hit it on the point when there's two different stories there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see her and how vulnerable she is and how much she can't control it, but then how it's affecting society so much. Like, they're the being consequences. Decimated by it.
It's interesting that her plight is so much more humanistic than, like, the zombies in the background. It's just sort of, like, this mess that, like, of bodies everywhere that they have to take care of. Mm-hmm. But she's, like, you actually see this... I don't know what I want
to
say.
You feel for her, and yeah, you don't really have a connection to
them. For me, maybe... I was actually more when people were turning into these zombie-like things on the train and biting people. I was like, yes, that's mm-hmm. a badass scene. Like, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think a standout scene for me was when the boyfriend is in a car and, like, one of the rabid people jump on his car and is attacking the car, and there's, like, some sort of military sniper person takes him out, and then there's someone that comes out in, like, one of those, like, you know...
contaminated suit. The...
In a hazmat suit. Yeah. And sprays down the car and cleans off the body.
Yeah, like, but, really quick. Yeah.
I don't know. That's it was a standout scene to me because it, like, was... I don't know. It was just really creepy. But
and we had a really interesting conversation the other day about Cronenberg. I don't know if you wanted to bring that up at all today.
Sure. Do you want to, or do you want me to?
Oh, well, you really described it well, the whole reason why he is so, you know, into the body as, like, a source of horror.
Well, I have to give out the proper props here. But basically, I was listening to an episode of the Horror Etc. podcast, which, if you haven't listened to their show, you're crazy, because they're awesome. Mm-hmm. But they had gone to the Festival of Fear. This was a couple episodes ago. And they posted some clips from a panel with David Cronenberg. And they were talking about his interest in body horror and why it is that he's drawn time and time again to, like, you know, focusing on the mutilation of the human body and that kind of being the source of, like, the terror in his movies. And what he talked about was that he is, like, a dyed-in-the-wool, unapologetic atheist. And so for him to make something that, like, a horror movie that comes from, like, a spiritual or a, you know, a supernatural perspective, it just is, like, completely disingenuous. So the body as a vessel is, like, the ultimate sort of reality, and to pervert that and to manipulate that
is the ultimate horror.
And to me personally,
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is interesting.
I don't know about you guys, and I was kind of joking with Ariel before, but like, Cronenberg movies, when I watch them, they make me feel really bad.
Yeah.
Like, I was saying, they're bad touch movies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I got touched inappropriately on a playground or something.
You walk away feeling icky, you know? You just kind of like, oh.
And I think the reason for that, is his tone and how clinical and aloof very clinical. It is. But it's also,
Dead Ringers.
Yeah.
Ultimate sort of example of that.
I mean, especially considering that comes from reality, you know? But, and I think the reason that it has such a profound effect on me is because, unlike spiritual things like demon possession and ghosts, these are things that we can choose to believe in. Like, we can choose to buy into them. Whereas when it's something that is, like, you know, physiological, and when the body is so capable of, like, you know, mutation or disease and all of those things, and there sort of is, like, cancer cells living within our bodies and things like that.
Definitely.
It resonates in a way for me that I feel like it's more powerful, and I come away from it feeling more disarmed and uncomfortable.
Yeah, and just, I mean, he has really powerful images of mutilation and weird, you know, body stuff in his movies that just really stick with you. And, I mean, I got that less from this movie than other,
like, Videodrome.
Yeah.
The Fly really gets to me for some reason. Probably because it has fingernails stuff. Yeah. I can't deal with that.
Yeah.
I just curled in all my toes when you said fingernail stuff. I'm like, ew.
Oh, his fingernails are coming off. Okay.
Yeah. But this one definitely, like, didn't hit me that way. But all of his other films always, I always walk away with, like,
Even Scanners, I kind of, and I think there is something almost, like, the way the screen is, like, kind of, like, nicotine stained. It just, like, it's this grimy, dirty reality that's a little, hits a little too close to home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's also the turtlenecks. It's mostly the turtlenecks.
And just a little bit.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
Okay, ending scene. Excuse me, my voice going out. I was yelling all day.
They better.
Kind of ending scene is the boyfriend kind of tells her, like.
He confronts her.
He confronts her, and he's like, you're the reason this epidemic is happening. You're the person causing this. You killed hundreds of people. And she's like, no, she doesn't believe it. She doesn't realize what she's done. So they get in like a scuffle and he falls down the stairs. So she goes into the lobby of the apartment building. And of course there's another perv out there, you know, guys just, you know, it's the '70s. When
you get laid, you know?
Cause I guess currently you just say hi to somebody and you know,
And you're right all up in there. That turtleneck in no time.
Yeah. So, she like, you know, it cuts to a scene of her on the phone with her boyfriend. She calls the apartment. He's not dead from the fall or whatever. And she's like, I'm going to do an experiment. I'm alone here with a guy. And I'm going to see if I'm the reason really why this is all happening. So apparently, you know, she did the arm move, you know. Ariel, you better watch out. I might do the arm move on you.
Uh-oh. I see you creeping closer.
So she basically locked herself in a room with the guy, and she's fed on his blood a little bit, and she's going to wait to see if he turns. And, of course,
what happened?
We all know what's going to happen. Yeah,
you know what happens. Surprise. I don't know if I have to say it or not, but that basically wraps up the end of the movie. You see her getting thrown into a garbage truck.
Yeah, he attacks her in it.
He attacks her, and
she's dead, and they dispose of her like they have been all the other rabbit bodies.
Yep.
And that's it.
I guess I like the way that she wanted to see for herself if she's really the one causing this.
Yeah, because she couldn't believe
it. It was like a self-reflection and kind of like a sacrifice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. If I'm causing this, let me stop it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know?
Because she knows that she's killing people, but she doesn't know that she's the cause of this, epidemic.
Yeah. So I guess that's that was a cool point in the movie.
Yeah.
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 But so, if I could break it down and be honest, I didn't like the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, how did you guys feel about the movie?
Like, honestly, I didn't really like it.
Okay.
I kind of feel the same way. I mean, there were definitely some really interesting scenes and some good scenes, but I felt like they were really few and far between. And the stuff in the middle, to me, really, really dragged. The plot really dragged.
But she needed to figure it out a little bit sooner.
Yeah. You know, or they needed, I don't know, something needed to be happening in between. Like, there was no sort of, in the lulls, there wasn't like a buildup of tension or anything like that. I just felt like it was really stagnant and kind of boring. And I also just like didn't really connect with any of the characters in the movie. Like, I kind of could have cared less about any of them, even her. I mean, I just didn't feel really anything for her, even though, you know, you kind of feel bad that she's stuck in this situation that she can't control. Normally that would pull me in and I would really feel for her, but I kind of didn't. I felt really disconnected from this movie.
Yeah.
I think that's really kind of true for a lot of Cronenberg's movies, though. And I definitely agree with that. I think that it does drag and you don't really connect with anybody, but that's sort of the novelty of, you know, the arm penis. It's like, oh, okay, I have to recommend this movie to people because it's got an arm penis.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an excellent springboard for, like, conversations about...
Yeah, yeah, sure. Definitely. I mean, it's not the worst movie that we've seen. No, not at all.
Hello. Go back and watch some of the clown movies we had to watch. I'm going to agree that I did not really like the movie. I think what it is it's a case of, like, a really amazing idea and some really kind of like shocking, incredible moments, but like, you're
in this case, Cronenberg's detached style kind of worked against it because you had to, in some way, connect with some of the characters. At least one. I mean, it could have been the boyfriend or it could have been her, but because you never really understood the characters or were they were particularly humanized, like you, when it slowed down, you didn't have an emotional investment to kind of drag you through the lulls. I think it's a movie. Now, this is one of the few movies that maybe would really benefit from a remake. Like, I mean, because the core concept is really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And I'd love to see, like, not CGI, but, like, modern puppetry, you know, take on, you know. And when modern I say a remake, puppetry. I mean by Cronenberg. I don't mean by, you know, I don't want Platinum Dunes to pick this up and, like, get the Michael Bayification of it. Like, I'd like Cronenberg to go back and perfect the movie with a budget, with a cast of people who could really kind of communicate the humanity of it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm glad that I saw it. I think it's really interesting.
And I think it could be remade because it's not like a classic movie or anything. Yeah. Like very few people have even heard about it. So
I had never heard of it before you pointed it out to me.
If it was remade, it would be one of, you know, the very few movies, in my opinion, that could be remade well.
I think it's a really good idea. Because, I mean, the core concept is really interesting, but
I'd like to capitalize more on the pandemic and more on the characters.
Yep.
And I think that if those two things happened, you could have a really interesting movie instead of just a really interesting idea. And the reason I say that there were interesting moments is because I watched it last night with Summer. And then today, Ariel needed to watch it. So I played it for her again, but I was watching something else on my computer. But every time we get loud, I'd look up and it was all the good scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And to see those strung together, it looks like really cool. Like a movie you'd want to see. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, sure. God, we haven't even really talked about the armpit phallus. Yeah. It is so creepy.
Oh.
It's like creepy. So there's this little like vaginal opening in her armpit. And like inside it, you can see something moving, almost like worm-like, parasitic looking.
Oh yeah,
and sort of ties into teeth too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, it's like this clear. It almost looks like insectile in that, you know, like some mm-hmm. insects will be clear mm-hmm. and almost jelly-like, but it's gelatinous. Like got a hardened shell. But then there's also like the texture of it is almost like veiny, which is what makes it look
like a penis.
Much like a penis. And it does kind of seem to have like, you know.
Yeah. And then it like fills up with blood or something.
Yeah, you see it fill with blood. But then also from like the what would be the urethra.
That would be uncanny, too. It's like a penis, but it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's really, I mean, and the thing is like, the mind that sort of created that, I mean, really speaks to, like, a really disturbing dark genius.
No kidding.
So, like, I want to, like, if you just were to cherry pick things from the film, it's got some really great stuff, but as a whole, it suffers.
Yeah.
So I would definitely, but for people who are fans of Cronenberg, I think this is a definite must watch. And I've never heard of it. I think it's sort of like a kind of a forgotten film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to find.
Which is why it would be a good candidate for being remade.
Absolutely. But I think if for Cronenberg fans, you got to check it out, if only just to kind of like see the birth of a lot of these themes that he has. Because it's definitely a lot of the like psychosexual, mm-hmm. like mutilation of the body kind of stuff that he, you know, is so famous for that, like, you know, it's clearly the precursor to Videodrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like it's like the proof of, what is it? Proof of concept for Videodrome. All right, so now you picked this movie, so this is one you really like, Lisa. So I want to get your thoughts on it.
Well, like I said before, it's not really a movie that I loved. It's just a movie that I thought was really interesting. And that's why I thought that it would be a good movie to talk about.
Absolutely.
On the show, because it really has a lot of interesting concept. I mean, it's like a zombie movie, but it's also got like body horror and, you know, the whole like female phallus thing. Which is kind of interesting, and it also ties in with, you know, the next movie that we're going to be talking about.
Sort of like the the innate fear we have of mm-hmm. of genitals,
yeah,
in general, definitely. And especially genitals in relation to women.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it's taking the fear of the vaginal fears that like we talk about with vagina dentata later,
mm-hmm.
and kind of like taking it to the next level with like, you know, now giving her not only the ability to castrate, but to penetrate.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. That it's like, it's still a vagina, you know, like she's still very female. But whenever these guys are kind of like, you know, sort of coming on to her and doing sort of creepy things, it's like they don't rape her. She does the penetrating. Yeah.
But at the same time, she chooses to go for those guys, though. Mm-hmm. Because she chose not to go for her best friend. Well, up until until the end.
She's like, I don't want it to be you, but it's going to be.
She went and kind of looked for those type of people.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's a mistake that she ended up in a...
No, not at all. Yeah, she did that on purpose. You know, and he touched her in the porno theater, but then she invited him to sit next to her.
She went into that theater for a purpose.
Yeah.
She was like, all right, which motherfucker is going to come on me first? And you're getting the arm.
It's an interesting, like, you know, turning of the tables kind of thing.
Well, because so much about horror, like, you know, when they talk about, you know, from a feminist perspective, is about, like, the penetrating.
Yeah.
The penetration of the knife. The penetration of this and that.
Yeah.
And so it sort of really flips that on its head.
It's very organic and... It's gross.
It's gross. Really gross.
I think it definitely had its moments.
Yeah.
Should we rate it?
I will give it that.
Well, let's do the. Well, I think we should do our regular scale of buy it, rent it, skip it.
I would definitely rent it.
Yeah. Rent it.
Rent it.
I'm with you on rent it. I don't know that it has a lot of rewatch value.
I don't think it has any rewatch value.
If you're a Cronenberg fan, you might want to
watch
it
once.
But you should at least, rent it. All right, so you ladies ready to move on to our second film?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take the whore inside.
So to speak.
Ba-dum-bum-ching. Okay, so the next movie we're going to be talking about is Teeth.
All right, what can I do for you, miss? Is this your first time?
Okay.
So I imagine you have no idea what to expect.
Not really.
Don't worry, I'm not going to bite you. Just lie down. Put your feet right in here. Okay. Are you sexually active?
No, I just want to be checked out.
Okay, then.
I think there might be something weird going on inside.
What do you put in here?
There is something inside of me that's lethal. Dentata.
What?
It's Latin for teeth. It's what's inside me. Are you afraid?
This is too weird.
Just wait.
Okay, so let me talk a little bit about teeth. It is from 2007. It was directed and written by Mitchell Lichtenstein and stars Jess Wexler as our main character, Dawn. And then other people of note are John Hensley, who plays her brother, who most people are going to recognize from his part in Nip Tuck, and Lenny Von Dolan, who I'll always remember as like the guy with agoraphobia from Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Harold, the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I know who that is. And then I had to
Harold
look him up.
Harold from Twin Peaks.
And I was like, oh my God, it's the orchid guy.
Oh, man.
Okay, so I've seen this before and Summer's seen this before, but this is a first watch for you and Lisa, right?
Yeah, and I watched it today, so I'm actually more prepared to talk about this film than the film that I actually recommended, which is weird.
Isn't it funny how that works? Okay, so do you want to our guest host, would you like to break down the synopsis for us since you're so prepared?
Sure. I don't know if, you know, having 3 vodka drinks is really a preparation, but...
That's how we all prepare. So...
Can I have my 5th, please?
You want another drink? Should we really quickly? All right, we're recording. Okay, let me pull up my thing. My notes. All right, so. All right, you were going to tackle the synopsis.
I was.
Please just synopsize for us.
Okay, so basically the film opens, and I thought it was really hilarious how there are these, like, power plants right behind.
The nuclear power plant.
Yeah, the nuclear power plants right behind the house and everything. It's like this idyllic, you know, sort of suburb type area, but with these giant power plants behind it. And, of course, Harold from Twin Peaks is the dad. And we see the two kids in the the little swimming pool together.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of like, you know, I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
Yes.
But it's kind of weird because they're brother and sister.
Step-brother and
oh,
sister.
Oh, they're step-brother and sister.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the parents aren't even, like, married at this point.
Oh.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I totally missed that. So.
Yeah, which is like, that makes sister. It a little he's like, bit no, less she's gross. Not. And he's like, well, I'm hoping she will be. And they, like, hold hands.
Okay. So, apparently, you know, the next thing we see is, you know, the brother is screaming and the parents rush over and he shows them his finger and it's like, the top part of his finger has been bitten off. And they're like, oh, no, poor you. Like, what happened? And, you know, of course I knew coming in what this movie was really about because I'd seen the trailer. And when I saw the trailer, you know, I was like, really? They're really doing this as a movie?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, so I know that the only way he could have had that happen to him is, you know, to
have inserted it.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it was a little disturbing that the parents were all like, oh, poor you. You know, they really like clamor around the boy, but then they cut to the girl's face and she's just sort of like, you know.
Well, I think the parents figure that she just like bit him.
Yeah,
they don't. Because babies never do that all the time.
No, I know. Yeah. I know the parents aren't like, you know, purposely being, you know, what's the word?
But dismissive of the daughter.
Yeah, dismissive, but they just don't know. But it's sad the fact that like she's been sort of violated in this way, and it shows her face and she's got this, you know, look of sadness. It's like, oh, but no. So yeah, and then so it cuts to the future after that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she's
delivering a very important speech.
She's giving a abstinence speech. Which, you know.
It's hilarious. Yeah, it was,
so by the way. Funny. So funny.
Yeah.
And she's giving it to, like, a group of, like, you know, tweeny kids. Mm-hmm. And
the indoctrination is starting early.
Yeah. And they have these, like, promise rings. These, you know, crimson red rings they wear around their fingers with, like, promise ring t-shirts. And, you know, you don't give away your special gift. Yeah. You only give it to your husband.
Okay? And she's totally buying into
it. Oh, totally buying like, into it. Like, they all love her because she's, like, so passionate about her speech.
About her purity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I thought she was kind of, there's something about her. Just maybe it's the actress, what she brought to it, but I really felt for her, even when she was like that, you know, even like the, you know, whole chastity, like, abstinence thing.
Yeah.
How ridiculous it
well,
is.
Well, she's so, like, wide-eyed. Like, there's no
she's
question
so
that she really, like, you know, believes it and is just, like, this wide-eyed innocent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something very appealing about her.
What's, like, the, like, you know, like, Disney
the
movies, they make, like, the characters the big eyes.
Yeah, totally.
So that they, like, she kind of has that thing where, like, you kind of are drawn into her and identify with her because she's got these big, gigantic, blue, wide eyes.
So basically, it shows her in high school. People are making fun of her. Mm-hmm. She walks into school and she gets, you know, bombarded by teenage boys making fun of her for, you know, being such a big abstinence advocate or whatever. And there's this one boy who, or, you know, teenage guy who's in her abstinence group, I guess. It doesn't really make it clear if it's like connected
like
to a
new
church. That's what I thought was weird. It doesn't really connect the abstinence thing to any religion.
Does I think
it?
It's a part of the it is a part of the church because like
okay.
It's like pastor or whatever.
Right.
And he's from another town and
but
he's transferred
really
over.
Yeah.
No, I mean like
in the speech she gives later on though, it does
yeah,
talk
it does
about like the Garden
yeah,
of Eden
with
and
Adam
the serpent
and, everything.
And Adam
yeah.
and all that.
And everybody sort of like spouts off these like pre, you know, memorized verses and stuff, and it's really scary.
It is like a weird call and answer thing.
Mm-hmm. It's very, that part was very disturbing.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, there's this attraction between her and this other, you know, teenage boy who's in her abstinence group, and they start hanging out. And
it's a catching feeling.
Yeah.
And stuff starts changing.
I thought that the, you know, the scene where she's, you know, obviously, you know, masturbating, she's thinking about him, but she's thinking about him, you know, on their wedding day. And
well, I think it's really important, this scene, because there's like a sister scene to it later that's really, really important. That she's having, she's in bed and she's met this boy that she's like had this instant attraction to and is like totally drawn to, but they both believe in abstinence, so he's kind of safe, but she can't help but have these like hormonal, like, you know, biological urges. So she has this like elaborate fantasy where she has the veil and roses, and she's
and her knees are crossed even as she's lying down. I'm like, how does that even work?
She's like literally laying in her veil in her wedding dress, and like he's like pulling the garter off her leg.
It's so ritualistic.
Yes. And then like she's going to, she almost masturbates.
Yeah.
She's like getting
and
so
then she,
excited.
She sees this image that she saw earlier on TV, which is like this worm with teeth. And it's like, it's very, that part was, it really made me sad, that part.
Yeah, well, because I mean, it is sad. Yeah.
It made me really feel for her, because it's like she can't even enjoy her own sexuality because she's got like this fear of this thing that is inside of her. I don't know if she's
she immediately stops, you know, stops herself and is like, no, no, no.
Well, she's like, what's wrong with me? Yeah. Like having those urges are wrong.
Yeah. She's completely cut off from her own sexuality and has no real idea of her own physiology either.
Yeah, you learn
that. Which is also interesting in the classroom when they have the whole sex ed, you know, scene. They talk about the penis. They've got, like, the diagram of it and everything. Mm-hmm. And then they have, you know, the page about the vagina. And, like, the teacher doesn't even say it. He's like, now we're going to talk about female and parts.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, there's something wrong with my textbook. There's, like, something on it. And he's like, that's
because they've covered it up with, like, a diet. Like, they've gone into the textbooks. Like, the state or whoever had decided that that was obscene. So the detailed photo, like the medical type photo, has been covered with like a giant gold star sticker, which I kind of thought
was interesting. But the penis is just fine.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
interesting is I actually had that exact same experience in sex ed in the Oakland public schools.
Too. What?
Yeah. We had like a whole day and like, I think it was like eighth grade or something. And it was supposed to be, like, sex ed, and our science teacher was the one who was supposed to be teaching it. And, like, we had a diagram of the penis, and we had to, like, go into our anatomy book and, like, write down all the different parts, like, match them up and stuff. But then when we were supposed to, the second half of the class was supposed to deal with, like, the vagina, and the teacher just wouldn't do it.
Oh, my like, sex ed was so different, goddamn, and I had to put a condom on a banana in front of everybody.
Well, I did that, but that doesn't really, you know.
But I mean, they got into detail. They showed pictures. No.
I went to private school. You know, we all talked about my scary indoctrination upbringing, and we didn't have sex ed. We had sex respect, and this is before the whole abstinence thing. This was something that just the school had decided, and we had like these charts that were like, on one side there was like holding hands and the other side was intercourse, and there was all the stages in between, like kissing, prolonged kissing, petting, heavy petting, and then like on the side with holding hands there was a sun, and on the other side there was like a storm.
Oh my God.
And like you got to petting, and there was like these big, like, you know, like starburst exclamation points, like danger zone, danger zone.
Oh my God.
And it was all about like, there was just like, just like, it was terrifying, like, about how condoms don't work, they don't prevent disease, and just, it was just, I mean, it was really terrifying to me as a kid.
Amazing to me.
Well, I think that there's a lot of that, you know, like, that girls grow up with this sort of, you know, fear of their own body, and they sort of internalize it, and I think it can affect, like, your own sexuality, and in a way, I think the film sort of touches on that.
Oh, you know? It definitely does.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, okay, continue.
Okay, so, I talked about the part in the class. So she starts hanging out with, you know, the teenage boy, and obviously, you know, they both have an attraction towards each other. I can't remember what it was that sort of...
Well, what happens
promoted
is,
her to call him and be like, come on, hang out with me, and then they go swimming.
Well, because first
it's really happened right before that, actually, it was like a sort of cathartic moment for her.
Well, there was a moment. Okay, here's the thing: is they've agreed not to see each other anymore because they're both having impure thoughts.
Yes.
But what happens is she overhears her brother, who's the same one that touched her as a child, mm-hmm. fighting with his girlfriend.
Yes.
And so she goes in there and tries to talk to him and be like, you know, I know we've never had like a close brother-sister relationship. I don't know what it is. And he's like, you know what it is. You know why.
Because you've always wanted me. This whole abstinence thing. Yeah.
He's like, come on, you know who you're waiting for. Mm-hmm. And basically makes it clear that he's like in love with her.
And he is like such a super creep. Like the part where he was putting the dog bone in his girlfriend's mouth. I was so disturbed.
The humiliation.
I was just like,
yeah.
No.
And he's got, you know, he's got pictures of naked women all over his walls, and he's screwing this girl constantly.
At the same time, I think he's so twisted when it comes to sex is because of what happened
definitely.
In the beginning scene.
Well, and he won't have sex like regular sex.
He will not have regular intercourse. It's only butt sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. This is a very mature conversation we're having. So we only refer to it as butt sex. I love how you said it too. Like, you can't see it because we're on the podcast, but she's like making like an O with her finger, with her pinky up. She's like she's having tea with the queen and talking about butt sex.
It's like Emily Post. That's what she would call it.
It's the proper way to talk about
sex. But no, but really, his whole sexuality is twisted.
Yeah.
Because of what happened to him as a child.
Yeah. And he thinks like he's like destined to be with his sister, basically. Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, you can't really be too sympathetic with him because he obviously, you know, must have been like,
he's forcefully a total creep
penetrating her in order to get his finger bit off when she was a kid. So,
but I do think kids do stuff like that.
They do
stuff like that, but penetrative stuff, I don't know.
I think
crossing a line.
I think, you know, it is to a certain extent, like it seems a little creepy, but yeah, kids do things
definitely.
Like that, and I think when they're that young, it's like
that,
there's
the
it's not as twisted or perverse.
The movie makes really clear that that only happens to her physiologically when she's feeling threatened or mm-hmm. feeling, you know,
yeah,
bad about the situation.
But I don't think just because she feels bad that his intentions were bad.
Yeah.
But I think as a grown up, he mm-hmm. is a hot mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's funny that he has the dog in a cage, you know, like
in his room. Yeah.
That's sort of, yeah.
It's kind of an interesting metaphor for her cage sexuality in the next room.
It reminds me of this old Fry and Laurie sketch where this guy gets in an accident and they have to cut off his penis. And so the doctor gives him like a pit bull as like his you know, substitute penis. You
know? Yeah.
It was very like that.
Nice. Okay, so continue.
Okay, so after that, the scene with the brother where
she's so upset. It kind of drives her to like into this other kid, Toby's arms.
But I think that it's a healthy point for her because mm-hmm. she's like, I'm going to reclaim my own sexuality. I want you to come and hang out with me and a little bit. Because
I feel like
ultimately
what she's doing is not unnatural, but in
you
terms
think maybe
of
it's
her,
like reactionary.
I think it's her kind of like she's feeling overwhelmed and she gives in.
Yeah, and she's kind of going to like push
out,
the boundaries.
I don't think
bit.
She really reclaims her sexuality till she.
I think that's her
later.
That's her goal, though, and I think that the fact that that's her goal is kind of
I would have to disagree because she really puts a halt on everything when it starts to go beyond.
No, she does.
Like,
I think
she's
feeling. I mean, in the same way that she ends up at that other boy's house.
Well,
I think
just because
she's
you
feeling
want to experience something sexual does not mean that you want full on intercourse. You know,
but
when
I don't.
She's not comfortable with that, and he pushes further.
I don't think
she
wants to reclaim her sexuality at any point in the movie.
I don't think she really understands her
I
sexuality
she,
at all at that point.
You know what I mean? She's so rattled by what happens that she just sort of like, and she wants, you know what I mean? That
she
weakens
from
the point where she just wants to feel, be around someone that feels good.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really kind of, I don't think, get in touch with her sexuality until later.
Yeah.
At this point, she still has.
But why
the intention
wouldn't she call like one of her girlfriends? And
well, the whole point is that she's weakened to this point. Like she wants to be around this guy, and it's kind of like her guard is down.
Mm-hmm.
So, cutting to the next scene.
Okay, so
it.
Whether or not she's whatever her motive is for this, mm-hmm. she hangs out with him, and she's like, "Let's go swimming! Yay! I brought my swimsuit."
Yeah,
and
she's definitely playing with fire a little bit.
Yeah. So then they go swimming, and it seems like this really cute scene. And But you know, I knew it was gonna end well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys are assholes. There's like when I posted on Facebook what we were watching, like our good friend over at the Explody Files, Explody Joe, was like, yeah, I like that movie, but every guy she runs into is like a freaking sex offender.
Jerk. Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, that's not a real great depiction of like mankind or an accurate one, but if they weren't, it'd be a pretty boring movie. So yeah, like true. I think to tell the narrative that, I mean, you can't really paint like a, or you can't really include like wonderful, well-rounded male characters. Mm-hmm. Like,
it would slow the plot down so much to do it.
But I mean, don't you think that's sort of a cop-out?
Well, I think it's, no, because the agenda of the movie is, you know, in the short period of time it has to tell its story, like in order for her to reach the different benchmarks in her story arc, these are the kinds of things she has to come across. Like every single one of them moves the plot forward. There's this first one, which you're going to talk about, and then the next one where she goes to the, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they each have an important plot point, and in order to, like, flesh it out and have, like, better male characters, you'd have to have a much longer story or alter her arc.
You know what I thought?
And make her more villainous.
You know what I thought kind of was great, though, is that they had her father throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
You see both her mother and her father as having this, like, really wonderful, supportive, loving relationship, because her mother is ill and like terminally ill.
Yeah.
And her father is like wonderfully supportive of her mother and and of her. And so even though like you're like, you know, you were going to see that all these horrible things keep happening to her at the hands of like every guy she comes across.
Teenage boys, which are a special group of,
well, not just teenage boys, her doctor.
I guess that's
true. At least there's like, you know, this one male figure that she really can like trust and is good in there.
That's true. Okay, continue.
So, yeah, so they're swimming and then they, you know, they go into this cave.
Yeah.
Which
is where people go and
into
do
the
it.
Cave. Yeah.
Can I just stop for a second?
Oh,
was anybody else really creeped out? Like, okay, they're in the pool, right? I mean, in the lake and things are sort of, they're making out and he's like grabbing her boob and it's kind of going too far. And every time it goes, starts to hit that edge, she backs away and moves away, and then finally she ends up in this cave and there is this sleeping bag there's a sleeping bag in the
cave.
She
wraps herself in a sleeping bag
and it's like, okay, it's in the cave, so either teenage people, like teenagers, have been having sex on it or homeless people have been sleeping in there, and either way you don't wrap your body in a freaking dirty ass sleeping bag. I was so disgusted. I was like, are you serious, really? Like, come on. Ew.
Yeah, I was grossed out by the sleeping bag.
Yeah.
So basically, it just, you know, it goes downhill from there. You know, they start making out and she pushes him away. And he's like, okay. And then, you know, I think he's going to be respectful at first, but then he just keeps sort of like, you know,
pushing and pushing.
Inching.
Yeah.
I haven't jerked off since
Easter. Right. What was that about?
Well, okay.
Well, I think what that was is, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, he mentions earlier that he has actually slept with a girl before, but they felt a lot of regret and like shame from it, and that's when he joined this like promise group or whatever. But obviously, like, he's still a teenage boy with all of these hormones, and you know, maybe he's kind of an ass too or whatever, but he's been like, you know, tapping down all of these like feelings that he's been having to, you know, be pure or whatever, and then he's in this situation and he's like, yeah, like you said, I haven't even jerked off in like 3 months.
But then he actually like knocks her out, and that's that's when shit gets serious. You know?
Oh yeah,
you're like, whoa.
Yeah, like, well, he will not back really, off, and she's really like, disturbing. You know, saying like, no, I'm telling you, no.
And she's unconscious, and then
he basically does date rape her.
Yeah,
I think what they're trying to get at with that whole jerk off thing though is sort of the dangers of repressed sexuality.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That like, he it kind of like pushed him to a point where he was so desperate that he crossed lines that he might not have otherwise. Mm. I mean, that doesn't make it right.
No,
but I think that's the purpose of that statement.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right there.
But then, you know, the part where, you know, when he's inside of her and she and her teeth, you know,
let's talk about that.
I mean, okay, this is like my problem with these type of films.
Okay.
Where, you know, this is like, it's like the rape revenge type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole thing is just so traumatizing. It's traumatizing to see that. It's traumatizing for her to be raped in the first place. But
yeah,
like on top of that, to be like, you know, a murderer.
Yeah.
It's even more of a traumatization.
Okay, so what gets me about this scene I don't mean to cut out anybody off.
No.
Is, okay, so we all know he forces himself mm-hmm. on her. And, you know, her teeth come out.
Yeah, I mean.
God, I wish sometimes we could actually, like, visualize us doing
it. I know. Because Summer's hand movements were pretty perfect there.
Yeah, I mean, awful when they show the bug when they're eating it. Oh.
Just in case, like, our listeners are not grasping what we're saying here, the movie Teeth, you know, it's like she has, like, teeth in her vagina, and when she is has something forced upon her, like, they clamp down, and they're like shark teeth, you know?
It's like the rape axe thing.
Teeth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so his penis gets cut off. I was discussing this with somebody.
It was really gross.
He dies right away.
Yeah, he does. Which is,
but she doesn't realize
it. Not right away.
But you would not die from that.
Yes, you would.
You could.
If absolutely, you could. You have to think about it. His like penis is totally engorged, and it gets cut off. There's
a lot of blood loss.
That's a lot. He died of blood loss.
But to me, he died too fast.
But he did. You don't see him die. Remember, he jumps back into the water and swims away, and she doesn't know what happened to him. And that's why she's like, when someone mentions him later in the film, she's like, when did you see him?
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know if he's dead.
Yeah, and she doesn't, like, see him in the water. Like, he just jumped down there and then, like, died in the water. Like, he could have crawled off into the woods and then
come back. Because we all remember Lorraine Bobbitt, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, it was such a horrific scene.
Okay, so maybe I was wrong about that scene. I could have swore that he died, like, instantaneously.
No.
Like, and died.
No.
No.
Okay.
He screams. I'm like, what a fucking
yeah, and he, like, he stands up and is like, oh.
Yeah, and she's screaming. Too, like, oh, and he jumps back into the water to get away from her.
And she's shocked. Yeah. I mean, she's shocked at what happened. And she, like, sees the penis, like, on the ground, cut off.
Yeah.
And, like, she closes her eyes to get out of that cave and, like, feels around because she cannot look at it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, she's that traumatized by what happened.
So this is the first time that you really get the feel of what she's capable of.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing is, like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of trauma in this. I think it's important, though, that we talk about the tone of the film.
Yes,
definitely. Because, like, what's actually happening on screen, like, on paper is really traumatic
and brutal.
But the tone of the film darkly comic.
It does, yes.
It is.
There are moments, it's and that's one thing that I really like about it, is that sometimes when things get too heavy in the movie,
mm-hmm.
they'll have, like, this completely self-aware, you know, moment where it's just, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of levity there that keeps it from being, like, really dark and twisted, you know? Yes, she's raped, but it's not, like, prolonged and really brutal.
No.
It's not, like, a 20-minute rape scene or anything.
And it's not graphic. I mean,
it's not graphic at all.
The disembodied penis is pretty graphic.
Yes.
But the actual sex acts that happen in this film
you
are
don't
not
see
really graphic.
No,
and you
not
don't get the same. What it is it covers really heavy topics, but it doesn't have an exploitation feel to it.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Like, where if you were to compare this to something in terms of, like, I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left, where the violence, the retribution that happens as a byproduct of this really graphic scene.
The rape and revenge sort of exploitation genre.
Yeah. Whereas this, I mean, you definitely know what's happening, but it isn't the same kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, there isn't a titillation factor. It's like, it doesn't have a titillation factor.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's not an arousing kind of thing.
No, not at all. And at the points where, like, the penis is cut off and stuff, there's humor there to it, you know?
There was more humor in the second one, I think. Not the doctor, really, but, like, the second guy that she was with that she, at first, you know, thinks that he's a nice guy. But although, you know that he's not because he's totally slips her these drugs and then lights a bunch of candles and she's, like, totally out of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I was actually really relieved when you found out that he was a creep because I was like, really? Is this going to be, like, her, you know, I guess, you know, in keeping with the whole vagina dentata myth, you know.
Her hero,
which, you know, is actually a part of it. I researched a little bit online. I found this one, like, old Indian story where basically the guy who eventually, you know, is able to tame the vagina dentata, he, like, sticks a metal pole into her and, like, breaks the teeth and then they get married.
God.
And
jeez.
Yeah.
That's awful.
I know.
Nothing like having your teeth broken.
Yeah.
To ring in the matrimony.
But I mean, you know, in this movie, she's, like, traumatized by what happened to her and, like, you know, she finds out that the guy is dead, right? And
yeah. Well, I think it's important to talk about the scene following this, because she goes home and is, you know, obviously has no idea what to do with herself. And they show the scene where she's like in the shower and she's trying to kind of wrap her head around what happened. And this is where she first starts kind of having, for the first time in her life, to really connect with her body mm-hmm. in a way that she never has before. The whole purity thing, like, has allowed her to just really disassociate from, like, her sex.
Yeah, she has no idea what's going on down there. Like, she doesn't.
Purity.
So you start to see her kind of start to explore, like, her body in terms of even, like, just touching, like, her inner legs, which is mm-hmm. something she wouldn't have done before. And she ends up, like, getting out. Is it prior or after the doctor's appointment that she goes and gets the book?
I think it's after
it's
the
after.
Doctor.
It's after. It's yeah. after. Okay.
We should talk about the doctor's appointment. Definitely.
Okay. Definitely need to talk about the situation with the book, but go ahead. Yeah. So she does something, you know, that's, you
she
know,
knows
pretty
something's
smart.
Wrong with her body.
There's something going on. She doesn't know what it is. Mm-hmm. So she goes to a doctor.
Who she trusts, you know, and this is actually one of the scenes that was more disturbing to me than any of the other scenes.
Yeah.
Is because, you know, she goes to this person who you're supposed to have, like, you know, complete trust in. And he asks her very early on, is this your first time, you know, visiting a gynecologist? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yes. And, like, he actually, you know, starts molesting her during the...
Well, you know she's in trouble when the glove comes off.
It's so disturbing.
It
I mean, that
totally
part
reminded
was just...
me of, what is that movie where you see the hand that rocks the cradle? Do you remember
right.
the beginning of that?
Yes. Like, her husband's
the glove,
like, the molester.
Comes off,
yeah.
And then the hand goes in.
We're going back.
Yes.
Well, I think, you know what, and I think part of what, I mean, because, yeah, there is such a huge violation of trust when it comes to, like, a doctor mm-hmm. betraying that kind of trust, especially a fucking gynecologist.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think the reason that you're able to go into it and not be too traumatized as a viewer and to buy into it is because, you know, as a viewer that, like, that he's not going to get away with it. So you're right. kind of just waiting for what you know is yep. going to happen.
Yeah.
And there is, like, a lot of physical comedy that happens in this scene. Like, mm-hmm. the actual violation, you're right, is really
disturbing.
Gross. The stretch test where he's, like, trying to fist her, basically.
Yeah.
Is pretty intense. But the whole thing about where she's pulling back and he's, like, attached and, like, dragging her
yeah,
across
like her,
the examination
you know, it
table.
Clamps down on him and he's, like, screaming and pulling back. Yeah, and she's trying to pull away from him. And, oh, God, it was so funny. Like, she's being pulled all over the table and he's like, ah!
Vagina dentata.
Yeah.
Vagina dentata.
Part, you yes. know, it totally brought it back down to, like, you know, the
yeah.
humorous level.
And there's like a trail
he's
of
like,
fingers.
Like, yeah, then they're like in
his
levers
all bit out. Fingers off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it when he's like in the OR
this
and they're like attaching the fingers and they're like, do you want to tell us how this happened, sir? And he like reaches above them and grabs the gas and like covers his own mouth. It's like, no.
Yeah, that was hysterical.
I thought it was also interesting. I know you wanted to talk about the textbook, but there was also the part where, before she went to the gynecologist, she was reading about, like, adaptation, mm-hmm. and she was reading, like, Greek myths, and she read about Medusa, and it shows
yeah.
Medusa's head, which
yep.
is also, like, another really, you know, I don't know if you...
Yeah, it's
yeah.
a great parallel, Medusa
yeah.
and what
like
she's going through.
The Medusa's head is sort of, it's supposed to be, like, a symbol of, like, castration anxiety.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Oh, I mean, that whole thing, I mean, and that's where you kind of get, like, the callback to the you know, nuclear power plant in the background. Because, I mean, it's like, every time they show the front of her house, in the background, you can see, like, the two,
yeah.
like, mm-hmm. I'm like, it, like, the Simpsons is being
like,
taped mm-hmm. behind there or something.
In case you didn't know, she probably has, you know, some sort of mutation
yeah.
from this power plant.
And her mother has, like, cancer or something,
yeah.
too.
That's true. I didn't
yeah.
even think about that. But you're right. There probably is a tie to it. But, again, I mean, it's like the stuff that we talk about on paper sounds so traumatic. But, like, the mood of the film is very lighthearted. I mean, everything from the idea of the nuclear power plant in the background to,
yeah.
like, the sort of, like, Danny Elfman, like, esque
the music.
Music.
The music
is...
was great, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the mood of the film was really... really good. And yeah. the music was great, and it just sort of had this...
it gives
this...
you that Twisted Suburb yeah. kind of sound.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the two, like, pristinely clean nuclear power plant, you know, things mm-hmm. in the background, but it's, like, this perfect little street, and, like... you know, clear
anywhere
blue skies
America,
and
kind of.
Sunshiny.
Yeah, it's weird how the yeah. skies are all completely clear and
yeah.
blue. It's just like the smoke is just going like straight up. It doesn't actually like disperse anywhere.
Yeah. So, okay. So continue after she goes to the doctor. And then she goes home.
And then she goes home and she looks at the textbook and she puts it underwater. Is that
well,
right?
Because there's the yeah. sticker. Remember, yeah, they the show sticker. Like immediately all the kids in the sex ed start tearing their books apart yeah. trying to like see the picture. But she's smart. She takes it and submerges it and like slowly slides the sticker off. And I love this scene mm-hmm. because it's the first time clearly that she has even any idea what she's packing.
She has this look
you know
of
what
wonderment
I mean?
On her face. Like when she actually sees the picture,
at,
she actually.
At first,
looks like...
it's like. Like confusion and like she doesn't know, like you can tell she doesn't know how to feel about it and shock and but then it turns into this look mm-hmm. of like, and she like looks at herself and she looks at it again and like you can tell she gets like a little smile on her face mm-hmm. and this is where I feel like this is where it starts to happen, that she starts to connect with herself in a positive way
yeah,
with her sexuality
definitely.
Is because you know what I mean, the worst has happened at this point, right?
Yeah.
You know what I and now from here I don't remember quite what
yeah,
happened.
Yeah, she has a positive sexual experience after that, but it's only after another traumatic experience. I know she's upset. Oh, it's because her mother collapses and has to be sent to the hospital.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you know, her stepbrother and his girlfriend are, like, having sex in the background while her mother is, like, dying on the floor. They don't even pay attention to her.
Mm-hmm.
She comes home and her mom's, like, laid out on the floor dying. So
yeah.
she's really upset. So she goes to one of the guys who initially made fun of her.
Well, no,
the beginning
he
of the
didn't
film.
Make fun of her. His mm-hmm. friend pushed him into her.
Okay.
And he's like, it's not fair. You're not allowed to, like... whatever, like ruin it or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he's
anyway,
got
like
a hit crush on her.
At one point, he picks her up, or
yes.
he gives her a ride, because he shows up at one of her her abstinence speeches and gives her a ride home and asks her out, and she laughs, and she's like, no, it's not you, because in her mind, she's still kind of reeling from these two, like, traumatic experiences where she's severed a man's penis or a kid's penis and another man's hand, or four of his fingers. And he comes back, and the brother answers the door.
Which was a weird scene.
Like, well, it was just like, you know, he's that's his territory, because he's, like, in love with her, and
I think
nobody
that happened,
else is going to
that happened
that.
Before the whole scene where he tells her, like, oh,
mm-mm.
oh, it no. came after?
Yeah, yeah, it was after the fact.
Oh, okay.
Because you're like, you know why. You understand the motivation, because he did that.
Yeah, and he just slugs the guy. He just hauls off and slugs him. And the guy goes, like, running away.
Yep. So she shows up at his house, like, totally distraught, just absolutely, like, freaking out. And he puts her in a bathtub, which is where you get the cover of the box, where she's kind of submerged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he gives her a pill to, like, relax her.
One of his mother's, like, Valiums or
yes.
something.
And then he starts like decking out the sex den.
Yeah.
He's got, like, candles. And
a vibrator.
Yeah. Champagne and everything.
But,
yeah.
I mean, she has, like, a enjoyable sexual experience after that.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's kind of out of it from the tranquilizers, but
which is,
I mean, kind of
skeezy. You know,
yeah, a little
part.
Bit,
totally,
but,
for sure.
But he's caring. Like, I mean,
he seems caring.
Like, he's at least attempting
at
foreplay.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And like, she, you know, she is enjoying this experience and is really like happy about it. And
even though she's kind of drugged up and out.
Yeah,
of it.
Exactly. And you know, she's afraid that, you know, he's gonna be killed just like everyone else. And he's like, no, I'm going to be the hero that can, you know, defeat the vagina dentata. And then
he's not really taking her that seriously.
Yeah.
Like, he's got his own agenda. So he's not really hearing what she's saying. Cause she's saying, you know, she needs to go to the police. She killed someone.
She wants to turn herself
in. And he's
in.
Just like,
no.
Which is good. I mean, she wants to take responsibility for her actions, even mm-hmm. though it was, like, you know, clearly
yeah.
a violation on her part. She seems at that point to, like, really be in a good place.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, she's, like, she's looked at the textbook. She's got, like, this, you know, idea of her own sexuality. She's enjoying sex with this guy. And
yeah, at this
take
point, she's very empowered.
For, you know, what she did. But...
I
you know, then
say she's
everything
empowered, but
I think
she's definitely
she's closer to empowered than she is heading that way. In my opinion. In my opinion. But I mean, I think that we sort of have disagreements there because we've had conversations like this before about certain kind of movies like this. But yeah, I mean, it's really heartbreaking at that moment she finds out that it's all been, you know, this big ruse and he's made a bet with this guy to get with her. And
Were you guys just heartbroken at that? Like, she was just so sad.
I just like the look on her face. She, like, had her arms over her chest. And she was just like, what was that? And then you just hear, like, it sounds like a guillotine.
And why would he, like, have that conversation while he's having sex with her? Because
he's a douchey teenager. He bet on this girl's virginity.
And he doesn't care. She wants to show that he's used her.
On this when I had taken a sacred oath? And he's like, well, doesn't look like it's too sacred to me or whatever.
Yeah.
And so she cuts it off, and she's like, shit. That was hilarious.
That was so funny. And he's like,
Mom! Yeah,
that was funny. On his speakerphone.
Yes. Yeah. The best, though, is when they show him in the OR, and they're, like, putting it together, and they have the little tiny penis on the tray. And the doctor's like, hardly worth reattaching. And the nurses are like,
and that lightens up the movie, though.
Oh, totally.
Like, it's that's what I mean. Like it is a comedy, and it's easy to like get caught up. It's very much so. But it's easy to get caught up and you know, like, get our feminist dander up. But it's important to remember that, you know, there is a comic tone to this.
Oh, and there were lots of points in the movies when I was laughing, like when she says, "Oh shit," you know, was funny.
And hitting the intercom, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important to talk about, because I was saying earlier how there's like a sister scene to the masturbation scene at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think this is actually the point at which she's most empowered in the movie is where she's standing in front of the mirror looking at herself naked and touching, not like she's not masturbating, but she's like touching her body and she's looking at herself in a sexual way and there's no shame in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And in comparison to like the veil and the flowers, you know what I mean? The whole fantasy that she has at the beginning, like her character, that is sort of the completion of the arc to me where she, I mean, like, obviously it's not over, you know what I mean? Like, you know, she still has to deal. This is prior to her finding out that the guy's just made a bet on her and, you know, the final parts of the film. But like, that's kind of like where she has kind of claimed herself and then moving forward, what she, you know,
what she does with it. But then, you know, it's sort of, you know, after she finds out that it was a bet, things for her, I think that she never reaches that level of empowerment again. It's just sort of like, it's just, well, okay, these guys are going to take advantage of me, but it's okay because I can cut off their penis, you know? And it's like, that's not, doesn't make it okay. You know, that's not empowerment.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I think with the brother, though,
especially the last scene, I mean, just, ugh.
Okay, well, let's go on to what happens next.
Yeah. Okay, so the next scene, she goes to the hospital, right? And she hears the girlfriend saying, we were having sex, and we, you know, heard screams from your mom, but, you know, he just said that happens all the time, so we ignored it. So she's just, you know, completely enraged that her brother or stepbrother let this happen, her
mother dies, yeah.
So she goes back, and we see her, like, primping and...
I think it's funny that she goes and, like, puts on the white dress.
Yes.
Like, the simple, like, it's, like, very sweet with bows and stuff like that. But go ahead and continue.
So she basically, like, you know, is preparing herself to, like, have this big seduction of her stepbrother, which is, like, just really disturbing. But she goes and, you know, he seems, like, a little bit apprehensive. I think he remembers, maybe. You see him a couple times in the movie
where he's, like, kind of like sucking on his finger that she bit.
Right, looking at it.
You don't really know how much he remembers of what happened.
I think he remembers it, but he doesn't know if it's true. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like one of those memories that he's not totally sure about because he's like, I think she bit me. Mm-hmm. But he knows that it wasn't like her mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole reason the girlfriend that he's with, he never has.
What kind of sex does he have with her?
His butt sex. But, I mean, and they make that very clear that he will not have just regular intercourse with a woman.
Yeah.
He won't.
Yep.
So, to me, I think he definitely remembers. what happened.
Okay. I think he remembers at least enough of it to be frightened, because she, you know, she seduces him. They start to make, you know, kiss, and they're going to have sex, and he flips her over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, he wants to have butt sex with her too.
Yeah.
But she won't let him. She flips herself back over and is like, no, we're going to do it this way, kind of. I mean, she doesn't say that. And then he's sort of like,
okay.
Yeah. But he's still like scared, like, but he like wants her so bad that he goes for it. And then there's this great scene where he's like touching her lips, and he sees her teeth, and he remembers like seeing her teeth as a child,
And it and all then clicks for him. Like, he's like, oh shit.
And you've got the dog in the background, like, this, you know, gnashing at the cage. It's just this really like weird imagery. And then, you know, like the dog, which is like totally, you know, like I said, like sort of like his, you know, extra penis, you know.
Yeah. His metaphorical penis.
Eating his penis.
Like, oh my God.
Which is horrible.
Oh God, it's so hysterical.
So she does her brother.
Yeah.
For like a minute.
For a minute.
Long enough
only
to be
for
like,
a minute.
See what we've been missing all this time? I'm like,
ugh. Yeah,
and then chomp.
So chomp. And then the dog gets the penis.
Yeah.
Well, then, it's a great scene.
What's the name of the dog? Do you guys remember?
Mother.
Mother. That's right. Of course. Mother the dog gets out. Gets out and eats the penis.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, no boy, no.
I don't know.
There's no catching that back on.
Drop it. Drop it.
God, it's so funny. Damn.
And then the dog like chomps on it and then like spits out part of it too.
Yeah, he can still have the nubbin, I guess.
A nubbin.
It's like that Tim and Eric sketch.
I know.
My penis only has a tip.
Yeah. It's like I have an acorn glued to the bottom of my torso. So, okay. So then that's basically the end, except for you see, you know, our Dawn decides.
See, I just could have lived without that last scene. I think that, like, that was just a really awful last scene.
Okay. So she.
And I liked the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. She hits the road and gets picked up by like an old hitch, like some
old toothless, disgusting guy
that will not let her get out of the car. Like, she keeps, every time she unlocks the door, he relocks it, and he's like smiling at her.
It's oh, and the tongue, so where he's gross. Like sticking his tongue out,
and then she smiles. So it's like, what? You know, like, even if you could, you know, get out of the situation by having sex and then cutting off his penis, like, why would you smile about that? It's just ugh.
Well, it's like she kind of realizes he's going to take advantage of her, and then she realizes what she can do to him. So,
yeah.
I mean, I kind of, I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I definitely understand. But it was sort of like, again, there was levity there.
I think it was more funny. Of an exclamation point at the end of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I know what you mean, and I
know, I tend to take things a little seriously sometimes.
That's okay, though.
That's how, that creates discussion. So that's a good thing. I mean, like, yeah, I see your perspective. It didn't bother me as much, just to me, because I guess it was, like she said, like, here's the thing, it's like, she can't be victimized. You know what I mean? Like, is it great that she's okay with it? Or is she even really totally okay with it?
I just would have liked to see a little bit more of, like, you know.
But it's just, like.
Again, empowering. I would have liked to see more of, like, an empowering ending than that. Or just, you know, I just felt like it was sort of tacked on. It was lazy writing, I thought.
Fair enough. I'm just from the, like, plain devil's advocate. I totally see what you're saying, but just in terms of plain devil's advocate, I would just stand by the fact that it was, like, more a statement of, you can't, you think you got me, you don't have me.
Yeah.
You think you can victimize me and keep me in your car and do whatever you want to me, you can't. So, come on, buddy. Give it your worst. But that's me playing devil's advocate. So, any thoughts, Summer?
Well, I've talked about this movie before on the podcast.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I watched it with my sister and my nephews.
Oh, that's awful.
Such a great
we let
family.
Them watch
Did
really
you watch
whatever.
This? Like, was it a double feature with, like, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Or
it was this and, like, zombie strippers or something.
Well, you know.
One of those crazy times when I was in Arizona. So, I enjoyed the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I don't have anything bad to say about it. Funny part is, after the movie, though, my nephews went on the computer and had to look up, how do you say it?
Vagina dentata.
So, yeah, they were looking up, and they were like, we found real pictures. It's real, you know. At the time, they were like, what was it, like 14 and 10 or something like that, you know. They're hopefully virgins, you know. God, they fucking better be. you know, so it was kind of like, it kind of freaked them out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're, and I grew up with guys. You know what I mean? That's all I've lived with is guys my whole life. So to see them watch that movie and then actually be freaked out about it and talking to my sister, I was like, maybe, you know, I'm sure it's not the best movie for them to watch, but maybe they just won't jump into having sex right away.
Yeah. So well, that's how ironic that they, like, this movie that sort of has an anti-abstinence, like, message, it may actually result in some abstinence. It's kind of funny.
It kind of, like, honestly, especially for the younger one, it kind of freaked him out a little bit.
Yeah, sure. You know? I can see that.
But it's based on, like, a whole, you know, sort of, like, castration anxiety.
Yeah. But yeah. For me, I would prefer them to practice safe sex than abstinence. I mean, it's their choice. But I would like people to learn about safe sex.
Definitely.
I'm with you there.
So, yeah. Speaking of looking up things online, our resident researcher, Miss Lisa.
It was like one of the first things that came up, really. It wasn't deep research or anything, but I thought it was funny because I found, and it sort of, you know, reminded me a little bit of Cronenberg because it was a gynecologist who actually found this, what is it called? Dermoid cyst.
Explain what a dermoid cyst is.
So a dermoid cyst is basically derived from the outer layers of, like, embryonic skin.
Okay.
Which are responsible for growing hair and teeth and bones.
Yuck.
And so basically she had this cyst inside her vagina and there were teeth in it. So it was like this actual case of vagina dentata, which I thought was funny.
Wow. That's right, fellas. That'd just remember that. Vagina dentata is real.
Before you think about raping somebody.
Well, I think, like, the vagina dentata myth was originally sort of created to sort of prevent rape and also to, promote abstinence in a way, you know, because there were probably diseases going around and, you know. So,
interesting. So, all right, you guys have anything else to say on the subject of teeth?
No, I mean, I really enjoyed this film. I kind of went into it not expecting very much, but I found myself really enjoying it. Like, I really liked Dawn. I thought her character was, you know, interesting. Yeah. She was a good actress. There's a lot of, like, really humorous, funny moments that I enjoyed. And, you know, as much as the, like, you know, subject material was kind of dark, it was really funny and entertaining.
Definitely. I agree with you. The acting, to me, I mean, if the acting had not been strong and spot on, it could have really pulled you out of this.
Oh, no kidding.
Especially for Dawn, because you really have to, like, get on board with Dawn.
Yeah, you have to.
Because she's killing teenage boys. Movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you have to be on Team Dawn to, like, really go with it. And I think the acting was really, really excellent, especially with her, watching her arc. And, you know, it was beautifully shot. The music really added something to the tone of the movie. Overall, I think it was a really, like, competently made film, and the humor and the writing all worked. I really liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it, too. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I really just had, you know, a bit of an issue with the ending. But other than that, it was really entertaining. I liked the acting. I liked, you know, like you said, the music and the tone. I liked how when it would get dark, it would pull itself back a little bit. But without, like, losing sort of, you know, the seriousness of what was happening to her, but it would still, it was very self-conscious, you know. It was playing on, like, this whole, you know, vagina dentata thing, which is like this old, you know, trope, but it was sort of, you know, I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Are you editing this thing?
I liked the movie.
How about you?
Good.
It was good. Good make film. Me like
film good, me like watch.
And I think you gave... Okay, so then shall we rate it? I'm going to give it... I would say rent on the cusp of buy.
I'm kind of with you there. I don't necessarily know that it's a movie that I'm going to want to revisit a bunch, so I'm kind of leaning towards rent it. But it was really good and very, very well made.
And it's also kind of something you might want to show people.
Sure.
Yes, and it definitely held up when I watched it again. It was enjoyable the second time through.
Well, that's good to know.
So that's why I'm saying, like,
I wouldn't buy it, but I would definitely watch it with somebody again.
Yeah. So
I would give it a buy it just so I could have it at my house and show everybody.
Yeah.
So you can traumatize your family members again. And
you're like, oh, you think you want to have sex? Let me show you this movie again. Awesome. Awesome. Okay, cool. So I think overall there were some interesting ideas. Again, probably. Yeah. Playing on our innate fear of genitals. They're scary and exciting and fun.
Oh my God.
Let's see. What? They're the fun parts. Okay, so I guess that's basically it for the actual movie review. Yeah. So we're going to move into the next section, and I'm going to let Ariel take over. We're reintroducing news. Yes. So, all right, what's going on in the world of women in horror?
This is something that Rachel pointed out to me, that Gemma Arterton, is that how you say her last
name? I think
name?
So.
Is playing Ripley in the Alien prequel, which I've sounds heard that, really cool.
Who is that?
And she
rumored
was,
cast.
Rumored cast. And she was like the Bond girl in Quantum of Solace. She
they
was
got
in,
dipped in the oil.
Yeah. She was in Clash of the Titans and Prince of Persia, too.
Yeah. She was Io in Clash of the Titans and like the main girl in Prince of Persia. She's super, super cute. She's got like freckles. And
yeah. She is really cute.
Really
and,
cute.
And, you know, she's been doing a lot of like action-y movies, so it kind of...
Like I know, but it's, God, like, how do you replace Sigourney Weaver?
I know.
Like, I'm trying to, like, let go of my remake rage, and just because it's silly, it's kind of silly considering, you know, like, if it's a good story, it can be retold, you know? Like, it's, just
yeah,
let
you
kind of
have to get past it because just so many movies are remakes these days. And it's like, every time I feel like, you know, I get in a, you know, I get angry about it and... It's sort of like I'm not
it's out of your control.
Like
you
yeah, it in it's a like way. You know, 60% of movies these days are like remakes or reboots
or
whatever.
Like 90.
And,
I just wish people would come up with something new.
It would be nice, but you know, you kind of have to let it go. Anyway, so that's kind of cool. And then, I don't know if you guys liked 30 Days of Night, the original.
I did. Actually.
I really enjoyed it.
I mean, it definitely is an imperfect film, but I liked it overall.
It is imperfect, but I thought like the cinematography was really good. Like the look of the movie was really cool.
Look of the movie was cool. It had a cool atmosphere, and it definitely had that, like, you know, it made you feel the anxiety of being trapped in this place that was dark and
It was very.
But then all the vampires are like, you know, these like Eastern European existentialist goths with Doc Martens as soon as they turn into vampires. And it's like, we just got turned into vampires, but we were able to like go visit Hot Topic, you know, on our way here. And there is no God and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. That was a little bit cheesy to me.
The reason I think I agree with you with like the wardrobe. You're right. Like where did they pick up those you know, Hot
That's,
Topic
you know what that can
but
be there, said about, you know, about any vampire movie
though,
really.
What I liked about them though is that they were monsters you know what I mean, like there was no sexy in them. They were like monsters and they were scary, and I liked the lead vampire a lot. I thought he was very intimidating and like the way that they manipulated their faces was monstrous to me, so I like that. But I agree with you with the wardrobe.
And
now it's gonna bother me.
I really like the vampire that they had like in the jail cell too.
Oh, the guy that he was like the human that the vampires brought with
that's
them.
That's what it was. Yeah,
well, I love that actor. Anyway,
he was really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the reason I brought that up is because they're doing a direct-to-video sequel to it.
I think if it's not out now, it should be out soon.
It will be on October 5th.
Ooh.
Yeah, and so, like, Stella, the girl who, like, survives in the end, she, like, relocates to L.A., and she's, like, traveled around the world trying to convince people that this actually happened, and, like, no one believes her. So she supposedly, like, goes to L.A. and intentionally attracts, like, this local group of vampires that are the same the leader of this group is the same leader that like brought all those vampires to her town in Alaska. And so she wants to like avenge her husband's death in this movie by killing Lilith, the like lead vampire. So it sounds kind of cool.
I've never seen it.
Really?
Oh,
you
girl.
Got it.
Well, it just, sounds like we have a future episode.
Is it good? It just, to me, it just looked cheesy.
I think you'll like it.
I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like the best movie ever, but
yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's not the best thing you've ever seen, but it's nice and violent.
Yeah,
There's some really good gore in it.
I feel like I'm just on here today being like, I didn't like it, but
that's fine. I'm the whole person. You know, it's good to have a dissenting opinion. And trust me, like last time it was me and Ariel teaming up on Summer.
Yeah.
But she didn't like The Last Exorcism. Like, and we did. And we loved it. It's totally cool.
It happens.
Yeah, I think you would probably dig it. But to me, that's just an invitation for an episode. I think we'll do like a double feature, the first and the sequel.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the indie comic book Emily the Strange is getting turned into a movie with Chloe Moritz. Is that how you say her last name?
I think from Kick-Ass, right?
Yes. Yeah. And from Let Me In.
Yes.
Which is getting amazing reviews.
I know.
Against it.
That seems out very soon, you want to see
it?
Right?
Yeah. Against it. Oh. Because I saw the original.
Oh, yeah. I know. Me too. I was so pissed when I heard out that they were making it. But
it's coming from a book. It's not like it's adapted from the same screenplay. Exactly. They're remaking the book.
Exactly.
You have to let movies be remade from a book.
Right? Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Okay,
it's very different. Than just
you'll give it a gray area.
I will give it a chance. Okay, I'll give it a watch.
Yeah. Yay!
And we can discuss at a later point.
Yes. Well, I love Chloe Moritz. I mean, how can you not?
Have you ever discussed the original on here?
We talked about it. Yeah. I know we've talked about it.
Yeah, we did talk about it at some point.
I think we've mentioned it more than once because we love.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last because I had like just seen it a while back, and we talked about it then. Anyway, so that was cool. Oh, and then this is sort of interesting. The Human Centipede movie, which has, everybody is talking about since it came out. There's number two.
Oh, God.
Yeah. How ironic. Number two. Get it?
Yes. And
you know what we're talking about, right?
The Human Centipede, yeah. Okay. I haven't seen it, but I saw enough about it.
I have no desire to see that.
Yeah, it's so very, like, very disturbing.
Feed her.
So the guy that made it, like, he's put out these, like, little trailer things where he's basically saying, like, I've gotten so much hate mail for the original movie and people think I'm evil and blah, blah, blah. And this time I'm going to outdo it. You know, it's like I held back on the first one.
In life.
And this time it's not going to be three people, you know, together as a human centipede. It's going to be 12 or something like that. So...
that's what we need to see.
Yeah. So I don't know how I feel about that one.
But that movie has the best line where, like, the girl tries to escape and, like, to punish her, he's like, you will be the middle one.
Rachel, when did you watch this?
Yeah, when did you?
When did you
I didn't watch it. Would it be worse to be the end one?
Well, because it comes in.
Well, the middle one doesn't, like, you know, I mean, like, they're stuck between people, so they have someone surgically attached to their face and their ass.
That's true.
Yeah, so I sure wouldn't want to be in the middle. It would suck to be
the middle one.
You'd want to be the head one.
I think I'd only want to be the head one, and anything else would be, like...
Who's, like, a Japanese guy who doesn't speak any English, so everything's in subtitles. Yeah. He's like, I'm sorry!
Okay, and then, does everybody know that, like, a new Hellraiser movie is coming out?
There's some, like, rumblings, they leaked that horrible concept thing of Pinhead, where he had, like, the jagged nails everywhere, and his face was, like, scarred instead of, like, the, like, total, like, I mean, the thing with Pinhead's design is it's so creepy because it, like, taps into that whole S&M thing, and it's, so rigidly designed. I don't know, like, how exactly to describe it, but...
supposedly there were, like, there's, like, been two in the works for some time, and this one is actually going to happen, I think.
Okay.
And they say
is
that,
it
like,
a reboot, or is it a sequel?
It's a sequel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the reboot was
and they,
what I was looking
they
at.
They had, like, they say that, like, Stephen Smith Collins, who I'd never heard of before, but he's bald, so that works.
But can he, like, have the menace of Pinhead?
I don't know.
Has he had Botox?
Maybe we should have Zellweger. Like... Swince McGillicuddy.
Yeah. Okay, and then just the last thing, and this isn't, like, about a horror movie or anything, but I just think it's, like, so hysterical and kind of has to do, like, loosely with horror that I had to bring it up. But I don't know if everybody's been following, like, Christine O'Donnell.
Oh, God. Yes, the anti-masturbation. This is perfect to go along with teeth.
I know. So, okay, right. She's the Tea Party-backed, like, Republican senator candidate Delaware or something like that? Oh, I think it's Delaware. And it's so funny, like, there are all these clips out there of her, you know, saying that, you know, masturbation and pornography are like adultery, and that condoms don't protect you from AIDS, and that they're like anti-human or something, which doesn't, I don't even understand that statement, but
they don't protect you from sin.
This bitch is crazy. Are you gonna talk about the mice thing?
I don't know if I know the mice thing. I was gonna talk about the witchcraft thing, because that's why that's how I'm tying it into horror.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
But you mean, so Bill Maher like had her on for like a bunch of like 22 episodes or something back in like the 90s, and he, you know, released a clip of her saying that she like dabbled in witchcraft in high school and stuff. But it,
I know, right?
I saw
anyone who's seen The Craft
in high school. Everybody,
no, but it's like really funny because she talks about like the first date she ever went on with like a witchcraft person was like, yeah, I went to see this movie and then we had a picnic on a satanic altar and there was like blood everywhere, but I didn't know it was a satanic altar. I had no idea what was going on
because there's no difference between Satanism and Wicca.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you Satanism, that's so Christian, you know. Yeah. You have to be Christian in order to like even believe in Satan. So it's like,
yeah, I just thought
not
it was
so much with the rebellion.
So
yeah,
sorry.
No.
It's more reactionary than anything else.
Well, it's clear she had no idea what the fuck she was talking
about.
She just wanted for
like
shock
a moron.
Well, she also like believes that scientists have crossbred humans and mice.
Oh God.
So there are mice with fully functioning human brains.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where was this?
It was like there, it's from news clips.
I don't even believe it.
It's true. That's... It was, they were talking to why I saw that episode of Bill Maher and he was talking about that.
Yeah.
Cause he's like, I know Christine O'Donnell. I made you.
Yeah. She's
I
like,
love,
oh,
she's a
so
sweet lady. She's a sweet, wonderful woman, but she needs to come on my show. Cause I made her.
Yeah.
And I'm going to release a clip
every
week that she doesn't
she's
come
like,
on my show.
It's a hostage situation.
Yep.
Well, also, like, the witchcraft thing made me think that she was like more cool than she is, you know?
Yeah.
No.
Well that's what people are saying, that like, that maybe the like the younger Republicans will actually like her because of this, but she's kind of doomed because all she talks about are these, you know, all the like sex stuff and like the social things, where Tea Party candidates mostly talk about economics, right?
Well, her thing
but
is
she's
fiscal
also, like,
responsibility,
yeah, and
but
she's in
homeless.
Debt.
She's like bankrupt.
Yeah,
she's talking
and
about
like
fiscal responsibility.
She only got her like diploma like a couple years ago because she had never paid off her college debt and hadn't even like finished all of her credits, and she's just like a hot mess. But it's kind of just, I just thought it was so hysterical, the witchcraft thing. It was so funny.
It reminds me of like when people don't know anything about drugs and they're like talking about, and they're like, I did this marijuana, this cannabis, and it like, I was like seeing shapes, and like, and there was like Jerry bears, and they were like, come on, Jerry, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it sounds like to me, for her to be like comparing, you know what I mean? Like, clearly she has no fucking idea what she's talking about.
Yeah, and she's like, yeah, I know witchcraft. They told me what they do. I know
it's
what
all
they
like
do.
About Satan and shit.
Ugh, it's just funny.
Miss O'Donnell.
Anyways, that's all I got.
All right. That's excellent. That was your first time of taking over the news. Good job.
Thank you.
Good stories. Okay, so I think we need to move on to our next topic. We're going back here. I'm bringing back an old segment that we haven't had on the last few episodes. And I'm very excited to welcome back to the program Miranda Skull.
Hey, everybody.
For a little video game talk. Hello, Randy.
Hey, welcome beep, back. Beep, boop, boop, video games.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
All right, so let's talk some video games.
Yeah. So what did you want to talk about?
Well, there's a couple things I want to talk about.
It's like we have this planned out.
I know, it's like I have these notes or something right here in front of me. The first thing I want to talk about is the new Dead Rising.
Yeah, Dead Rising 2. Surprise.
Well, I couldn't remember if it was Dead Rising 2 or if, for some reason, I was thinking it had, like, some, like, colon something or else.
Well, there's actually a download-only game.
That's what I'm
getting
confused
with.
Called
Dead Rising 2 K-Zero, which is just, like, a little prologue. And then they just announced about a week ago at Tokyo Game Show that there's going to be an epilogue called Dead Rising 2 : Case West, where you play as Frank West, the photographer.
Oh, from the first game.
I've been in wars, you know, or whatever he says.
Yeah.
From the first game.
As long as Otis isn't in there, I'll be happy.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Dead Rising 2 is just about to hit, and
Have you got to play it yet?
I played it a while back, like back in May, June time frame at E3, and I thought it controlled better than the first Dead Rising. It's being done by a US developer. It just kind of feels a little more like a Western developed game. Mm-hmm. But the big thing this time, I mean, it's set in this kind of cool new environment, this like casino. It's supposed to be like Las Vegas, basically. And yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do. It's like way more interactive, like in terms of like, you know, throwing the zombies into things and throwing mm-hmm. things into the zombies. And I think I actually got an achievement while I was playing for like knocking a zombie into a wheelchair and then running him around through the casino. I got like
zombie awesome. Slapstick.
Yeah, I got like an assisting the elderly badge or something nice. Like that. You know. But the big deal in this game is the weapons, the whole idea that you basically like anything that you find you can kind of like duct tape together into a weapon.
That's awesome.
Cool. So they have this one that one of the very first ones that I made was you find a janitor bucket and a power drill, and so you create this bucket that you stick over the heads of the zombies, and like it like liquefies their heads.
Oh my god, I wouldn't even think to put those two together. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically there's like this whole experimentation thing, and I guess it does kind of, I mean, it kind of borrows from the idea of, I mean, come on, going back to Dead Alive.
Yeah.
And Peter Jackson, like, the idea of, oh, I'm going to use a lawnmower to, or a cricket bat, you know.
Or I'm going to shove a light bulb in someone's head.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this kind of really inventive, this stuff. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, hey, maybe if you were stuck in a crazy casino shopping resort with tons of zombies, you might, and a dirt bike, you might, you know, duct tape a couple of chainsaws onto your handlebars and then drive through the zombies and just decapitating them all. Like,
I love what you're picking out as being like ridiculous is that you would morph different random things together into a weapon, and not the fact that there are zombies taking over.
Well, Vegas strip mall or whatever. Of course, that's not ridiculous.
Zombie apocalypse. I mean, this is just people.
There's video games have presented us with a number of different possible takes on the zombie apocalypse. This one happens to be, you know, based around how inventive you can be in creating weapons.
Well, I think it sounds like a lot of fun. When does that come out?
That's like out this month.
Nice.
So not much waiting for that.
Oh, speaking of waiting.
Oh no.
Let's talk about the game that I have to wait so long for, and I can't fucking bear it. I can't stand it. It's so long.
You're talking about waiting past the end of the world as we know it in 2012.
Yeah, I know. I hope that the release beats the Mayan calendar.
I don't know. Before we started recording, when Ariel was checking out this trailer for what you're going to talk about, I said, it's due out in 2012, and I think it's probably going to be like end of 2012.
Oh my god. So anyways, before we keep going, let's talk about what it is. What I'm talking about is this video that was released for, was it Tokyo Game Show?
Yeah, it was around Tokyo Game Show.
Of Bioshock Infinite, which is the latest title in the Bioshock franchise. It's not Return to Rapture like the sadly inferior Bioshock 2, but it's actually, it's not really a direct prequel from what I understand, but it's, it takes place in a time prior to the fall of Rapture in a new city in the sky called Columbia.
Right.
And like,
city in the sky, by which you mean?
I mean, like, it's like skyscrapers that are on like these giant, like helium filled, like nylon, like what is that? Burlap. Almost.
I don't even know what they're using.
Like some sort
it
of
takes
giant
place in 1920s.
So. Yeah, so it's sort of like the era and the look of World's Fair, and like right. It's this city that they created to float around the world to, like, basically intimidate the rest of the world just by showing, like, the might of the United States and, like, that we control everything, including the sky. We can build in the sky.
And I love the way you get around. Like, all of the different buildings are connected by these little tracks. Yeah, and you just, like, yeah, a skyline where you grab onto this thing with one hand that, like, connects into the track. And then you just go, like, shooting like a roller coaster off to the next building. That's super cool.
It looks amazing. So, like, the plot, from what I understand, is that, like, the city was meant to travel around the world, but it disappears. And along with it, there's this woman that you, as a private investigator, are sent to find. You have to find Columbia to find this woman. And when you get there, it's kind of the same sort of thing, only maybe a little bit earlier, in that it's this magnificent city that has been, that is, like, fallen into ruin. Whereas in Bioshock, it's like almost the original, like, Bioshock, it's almost empty except for a few people who have done so much damage to their DNA. They've become like these, like, addicts for, like, splicing their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this city, there's still, the people are still there, but there's, like, something wrong with them.
Something weird is definitely going on.
Yeah. And there's a guy who's, like, the newspaper delivery person. He's got this mechanical horse that the wheels have broken off the wagon, and so he's being dragged along. There's sparks coming off the wheels, but he's just totally oblivious to it.
Like, and asleep,
there's a woman sweeping the porch of her building while it's engulfed in flames. She's totally oblivious to the fact that the building that she's sweeping the porch of is on fire.
I mean, there's a whole lot in it that's just the thing that impresses me so far about it as a, I mean, the Bioshock and System Shock games, and this is actually from Irrational Games in Boston that did Ken Levine and his team there that did the original Bioshock and did System Shock series before that, which are all horror games, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very, very effective horror games.
Atmospheric.
Yeah, atmospheric. Creepy, and then disturbing. You have this game where, you know, for at least a good part of it, even based on what we've seen, that it takes place, you know, outdoors and in broad daylight, and you think, oh wow, how scary could that be? It's all colorful and bright, and there's red, white, and blue, and flowers and everything, and, you know, not maybe 20 seconds into this trailer, you realize, wow.
Something is off.
Yeah.
It gets creepy really fast. Dead horses and, you know, crows attacking people.
I love that part. It's so reminiscent of The Birds with all these, like, mm-hmm. really dark, disturbing crows.
Well, it looks like you can drink this thing called Murder of Crows, and it gives you control over the crows.
Yeah, because they seem to, like, moved in unison.
And there's some sort of supernatural aspect to it. I don't know what it is. Well, but really what makes it stand out is just, like, the scale of the game. Yeah. It is so unbelievably epic and immersive, and it's just like a, like, what is it, 15 minute long, 10, 15 minute long?
It's a 10 minute long video.
10 minute long video. And, like, already, even though you've seen, like, a fraction of what the game is capable of and the characters and
mm-hmm.
and kind of, you know, just hint you don't really at know what anything it's happening. About them yet, but... And even hints about the theme. You can just tell that you're just seeing a drop in the bucket of, like, the, like, visual wonderment that's waiting you. Well, 2012! It's so too gorgeous. Long!
It's not coming out for another 2 years, so...
Oh.
It's just so beautiful.
And,
God,
you know, gorgeous. Going back and looking at kind of how Bioshock was originally shown and then how it turned out compared to the, you know, like, the original trailer for the game, it was just light years better. So
I can't even imagine, because it's already just amazing. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing. I want to play it right now. I want to stop recording and play it right now.
Yeah, and there's just so much mystery about it. There's, like,
there's so much weird stuff, like,
hidden in the
nationalism messages and, like, this whole, like, anti-immigrant thing. I don't know. It's very, like...
Like, but there's automatons with crazy giant hands powered by human hearts and giant flying automaton... birds and like weird shimmery effects and things transforming that you wouldn't know if you didn't, like, watch it about 20 times like we have.
you guys are addicts.
And then the whole idea that it's called Bioshock Infinite, and there's that seems to be, like, the most closely guarded secret about the game out of anything, is that Ken Levine, the game designer, won't say what that means. It's not Bioshock 3, it's Bioshock Infinite. And he says, well, by the time you beat the game, you'll know what that means.
Huh. So, I mean, like, I'm a total gamer. Randy's clearly a total gamer geek, too. And we're like, dying over this. But Summer and Ariel, I showed you both the trailer.
I'm totally not a video gamer person, you know that. But, unless it's some Street Fighter or some Mortal Kombat.
Okay. Or Tekken. Yeah.
Or Tekken. I love Tekken. But the trailer from this, it did look really badass.
It
looked good. Like, maybe I could sit here and watch you guys play it.
Like, it really feels almost... It feels like such an epic movie and narrative.
Yeah.
That I suspect it's going to be a similar situation where I start playing at 10 o'clock at night and don't stop till the game ends at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Because that's how I played Bioshock. What about you, Ariel?
I mean, I think it looks absolutely amazing. And when you guys showed me Bioshock and Bioshock 2, I was just, like, blown away by the way that it looks. And it makes, like... They look so amazing, and the plots, like, what you see of it just kind of creeps you out and makes you want to know more. It seriously, like, depresses me that I will never be able to play these games.
Aww.
Like, that's the sad part, is I was a video game addict as a kid growing up. Like, my brother and I used to play video games, like, nonstop. But then as soon as it got to this certain point, like, in the development of video games, I stopped being able to play. Because even watching that 10-minute video was hard for me.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, so, like, that's what makes me sad. Because, like, they're so freaking cool, you know? And that's the same thing with, like, 3D movies. Oh. I get really sick with 3D movies. And it's because you have to, like, change your visual range back and forth so much. That's what really does it for me. And just the movement of it throughout the game.
That's heartbreaking. Because, like, to me, people who are not into gaming and not really... you know, exploring the stuff that's out there are so missing out. Because, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is really, you know, like, I don't want to say shallow because that has such a negative connotation. But, I mean, it's pretty simple. Like, you know, the premise, even if the graphics have gotten, like, a lot better, they're pretty basic. But then there are some other things that are just, like, you know, they're the difference between, you know, Resident Evil and The Exorcist. You know what I mean? Like, one of them is all... about the way it looks. The other one is, like, really, like, deep and this profound experience. And that's there. I mean, there's that same kind of variety in video games now, where there's an opportunity for such incredible narrative, interactive narrative. And I think this is going to be the next... It's going to be like the Citizen Kane of video games.
Everyone talks about what the Citizen Kane of video games is going to be. And I think that there are very few... game developers that could ever achieve something like that, then, you know, I really think that Ken Levine is the game, one of the game designers that could kind of produce that sort of thing.
If it's not Bioshock Infinite, it's going to be something Ken Levine develops.
Mm-hmm.
Because
eventually,
I mean, he's kind of on a level that, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff up there that's amazing. Like, you know, something like Fallout is amazing and immersive in a way that, you know, no games I've ever played are. But in terms of just narrative and creating a world, nobody can touch
Ken
Levine.
And he's not really a household name for even for gamers, really, like some of the other people, like Miyamoto that created Mario.
Or David Jaffe.
Or Hideo Kojima. You know? But, yeah, Ken Levine among game designers, even in among those game designers, they kind of all look up to him. Like, you know, like directors all look up to, you know, a great director, you know, like a great director, and
Orson Welles.
Yeah, Orson Welles, like yeah. he's actually revered by his peers, and
well, he's a visionary.
Yeah, and pretty much, you know, every game designer that you talk to is like just as excited as we are to like actually see what this thing is like when it's done.
2012.
I know when I saw that and he was like talking about it, I was like so sad for you. It's gonna take that long. How sad.
So we'll be talking about this on episode what, 200?
Oh no. All right. Well, I guess that's about it for video game talk. Unless there's any other titles.
We'll have plenty to talk about in the next episode.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Randy. I really appreciate it.
Anytime,
thanks,
girls.
Randy.
Let's move on to the best part of every show, the part that feeds our ego and strokes it and pets it and makes us feel all warm and fuzzy.
Yes.
And that would be listener feedback. So we only got one email this time. We got voicemail, but we did get one email, and guess who got it?
Me!
Ariel! So yay. Why don't we start off with that, and then we'll move into voicemail. Go ahead, Ariel. Why don't you read us our one letter?
Okay. Well, this is from Nudie, our number one fan. We love him so much.
Hey, wait a minute, Nudie. Why didn't you email me?
Oh, snap. We're going to have a zombie girl brawl. Look what you're doing. You're tearing us apart, Nudie.
All right. So he writes, "Hello, Ariel. I'm writing to you hoping I'm your first emailer. Rachel called out for Ariel mail, and here it is from the Z Girls, number one fan. As to the Exorcism podcast, I had planned on calling in, but I figured I had a few months to make the call. Hey. No such luck. Thanks, Nudie.
See, you complain we don't put them out soon enough. You complain we put them out on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I just can't win.
I think they want consistency. I think that's the problem.
We're trying.
All right, so he says that he really can't comment on these movies since I've never seen them, so I will go back to The Descent 2 for a bit.
Oh, no!
This one just keeps getting pulled back.
No, you don't need to see it.
I love The Descent, the first one.
That's why you shouldn't see The Descent.
That is the exact reason you
should not. Okay, the first one is fucking top-notch, A+.
The second one is just a poop pit.
Oh, with an actual poop pit.
Which ending was the second one based off of? Because I know there were two.
Yeah. It's based off of the one where she gets out. Okay. Because she's...
Boo. That's not the ending.
She's like your main character, but her character is completely changed.
Yeah.
And the creature design is completely changed.
It's like part two, taking place in hell.
And like the boys come in and ruin it.
Comically bad.
It's so bad.
So awful.
So bad.
Okay.
But continue.
Yes. So he says, I feel like I need to answer to my opinion on this movie. By no means was this an awesome movie. I just thought that it was more of the same creature goodness, amped up a bit with blood and gore. Now, from your view, I can understand your points. You beautiful ladies are reviewing this movie and comparing it to the first Descent. I, on the other hand, turn on the movie and watch away without comparing it to the much superior predecessor.
Okay.
I had a good time, though, picking apart some of the dumber aspects of the movie and the now famous disappearing voicemail.
Oh, you know what? I have. Here's the thing is we recorded a response and then, like, I lost the freaking voicemail. I don't know where it went.
Can you please call us? I'm gonna voicemail.
When I edit this podcast, I've saved the raw podcast this whole time because I have to go in and find this one like 2 minute clip of us responding to his voicemail. It's coming.
She's trying.
I get an A for effort.
Yes. So okay. But I go into these movies basically just to sit back and relax and have fun, and I did with The Descent 2. Now, Cabin Fever 2, that's another story. Total crap. One thing you can say about Descent 2 is you'll never forget the poo pit. Lol.
Very, I know, very it's burned true. Into my retinas.
Yes.
Lols.
Okay, and then he has a little tip for you, Summer.
Oh.
Summer. You really shouldn't threaten to kill someone on tape, as it will be on the internet forever.
I love that. Like, you have no idea. You can't even remember. Who did you threaten?
I don't know who I threatened to kill.
You threatened to kill somebody. You just got like, I don't know who. I threatened to kill so many people during my day that I just cannot pinpoint the one
blood,
it was.
Blood what?
Yeah, I just can't help it.
Can't talk.
So he says it'll be on the internet forever. You have to hide the evidence, girl, not give it to him.
Wow, you know what just happened? Nudie just broke it down on your ass.
I think he did.
Summer, you should look and see if she can be on 1.0 pint-sized brawlers next season. Get rid of all that pent-up aggression. As usual, a great show, and I do hope your schedule allows for more frequent shows. Love you, ladies. Your number one fan, Nudie.
Aww.
P.S. My congrats to Brianne on her recent addition to her family. And Ariel, tell Rachel I'm still waiting on my audio clip she's going to send
me. It's coming. Hint taken.
Yes. So thank you, Nudie. I love getting mail. It was wonderful. You made me smile.
Yeah. Nudie's the best.
And thank you for the advice. I won't threaten to kill anybody again on the podcast.
I don't know, on you, the podcast.
Have you are you aware of our like Nudie is an OG. Like he's been our fan from like day one. I think he was the first person to ever write in. Yeah. He has been like with us from the first episode.
That's cool.
Which if you've heard the first episode, it's pretty impressive that he stuck around for number two. So yay, we love Nudie, even if he is giving me shit. Okay, so let's switch over to voicemail, because if you don't know, we have a voicemail line here at Zombie Girls.
Yep.
I'm going to give out the number now and at the end, so get your pens ready, peeps. Okay. So you can reach us at 678-6-Z-Girls, which is 678-694-7759. All right, so let's listen to some voicemails.
Ladies, good evening. This is Evil Prodigy out of Northern California. I just want to say... I love your guys' podcast. Like to see them, listen to them, I should say, a little more often. I think you guys mesh real well together. It's obvious that you guys have been friends for a long time, so that's awesome. You're all very well-spoken. I do have one recommendation out here in Northern Cali, and that is review some zombie movies. Listening to The Descent and Basket Case, I mean, that's all fine and dandy, but you're the Zombie Girls. I want to get your take on, I don't know, four or five different flicks, whether it's from Romero Films or others. I think that would be kind of cool. At any rate, I hope to hear episode 18 sooner than later. Evil Prodigy, Northern California. Talk to you soon.
All right, so...
Well, thank you for the compliment about being well-spoken. We always appreciate that. And I think he might have a point about the zombie thing.
Yeah, I agree with him. I think that's something we've discussed, and it's in the works of totally a dedicated episode to zombies.
Yep.
And hey, what part of Northern California are you from?
I seen that area came up. I was like, uh-oh.
You know.
We got a Cali here. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, totally. Here's the thing, is like, coming up with... I mean, there's tons of topics left. We've barely even scratched the surface of things to talk about. But I love the idea of getting some ideas from listeners. So
yeah, totally.
Guess what, Evil Prodigy, by the way, awesome name. You're going to get your wish. I think if not this next episode, but either on episode 20 or before episode 20, we're going to do a zombie episode. Yep. A fully zombie-dedicated episode.
You got your wish.
So thank you for your feedback. It's always so good. It's always so fun to hear from a new listener.
I know.
This next voicemail is from our buddy Eddie at the Source Sport Movie Blog.
Well, hello, lovely ladies and zombie girls. This is Eddie from Lincoln, Mass, calling in to tell you how much I loved that last show. It was great, and that was number 17. And I had something to say on this whole I spit on your grave thing. You know, I watched that movie and couldn't even bring myself to put a review on my blog. Mostly because I guess I don't see the empowering woman message in it. You know, the majority of the movie is this poor woman being brutalized, you know, sexually. And then the way the writer decided that she would get revenge is to use sexuality to lure the men to the point where she could harm them. And I guess, you know, the first half of the movie, the abusers are objectifying her and using her as a sex object. And then somehow the writer feels like the only power this woman has is to use that same sexuality and make herself a sex object again in order to then get her revenge. I mean, I would think that in a revenge movie, it would be much simpler, since they don't see her as a threat, to just walk up and shoot him. I mean, she had the gun. It was part of the plot. So to me, it felt like a double whammy as far as really what the writer thought of women. And I didn't really see that much value in that. I thought that was sort of poor. So that's my thoughts on that. Love the show. And I hope we never have to talk about I Spit on Your Grave again. And can't wait for number 18. Bye.
Before we even respond to the content, I think we've got to talk about the accent. Am I right?
Yeah. About the accent?
Could you hear his accent?
Very cute.
He has like a Massachusetts accent. So he's like...
Oh, is that where it's from? Okay, let's figure it out.
So, okay. I mean, he called in to talk a little bit about the I Spit on Your Grave discussion that we had on episode 17.
Yeah, and way to go, Eddie. He's so right on about all of it.
I mean, he's totally right. But if anything, I think that his voicemail just totally underscores, like, the fact that we're really going to have to do an episode on this movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess that's going to force me to actually watch this movie.
I know, me too.
Yeah, I mean...
And the remake is coming out, right?
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. With the nice, like, you know, hyper-realistic torture porn edge.
Oh, fun. That'll make it even better.
Rape and torture porn. It's my favorite things.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, I think Eddie had some really good points here that a big part of why I struggle with this movie is that, yeah, I mean, she's brutalized and viewed as a sex object and then only turns around... And, I mean, if I want to play devil's advocate, you just say that that's how she, like, catches them off guard and plays to, you know, their preconceived notions of that she wanted it, that, you know, she liked it. And so I can kind of get on board with that to a certain extent. But the fact is she doesn't just, like, use it to lure them back. Like, she actually participates in additional sex acts, which to me, you know, is the double whammy he was talking about.
Yeah. You right. could kind of say the same thing about teeth, though, too.
Yeah, I guess you're... I mean, yes and no, but...
It's done in such a different way, though. I mean, she's never, like, raped for, like, long periods of time. It's not graphic in that same way. And it's a black comedy, so it's very different. But she does, you know, use her sexuality and perform sex acts in order to seek, you know, revenge against, like, her brother, for instance.
Yeah, but I think the one difference I would say also is that I Spit on Your Grave is meant to be pretty straightforward and it is an exploitation film, whereas
right.
not only is Teeth a black comedy, but it also is very it's really more metaphorical.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's an extremely good point. Yeah.
That, you know, like... When I was on Splattercast, when we discussed Teeth, like, DJ and I got an argument about whether or not Teeth qualifies as rape revenge. And, you know, my argument is that the formula is not exactly, you know, point for point for point so much as it's just, like, she's sort of, like, rape revenge personified. She's sort of, like, the, like, ultimate justice, like, ultimate revenge for rape. So...
Yeah, it's like a Greek myth version, kind of, yeah.
So I think you could find more empowerment even in that, even though there is the aspect of her participating in sex acts to get revenge than in something like I Spit on Your Grave. But I also think my reaction to it warrants further, like, I feel like I need to think about it more. I need to discuss it more. So as much as Eddie's ready to kiss this goodbye, I think at some point in the future, we're going to have to do it.
I think we're going to have to bite the bullet. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on the subject, Summer? I didn't even let you get a chance to get a word in edgewise.
No, like I said, I've never seen the movie, so I don't really know much about it. So definitely I think we need to do a podcast on it. And we'll have to get back to Eddie.
All right, cool. Well, all right, so on to our next voicemail.
Hello, this is the Reanimatrix calling. Just calling to say hi. Sorry, I can't be there this weekend. I have work to do. I need to make some money. So, miss you guys, Summer, Ariel, Rachel. And I hopefully will be in on the next one. So, miss you. And introducing my new zombie girl, Daisy, the little zombie snack. Yes, she's here. All right, I'm on my bike right now.
So I gotta get going. Love you guys. Bye.
We love you too.
I know.
I have still got to meet Daisy.
Oh,
I want to see the cutie pie.
You've got to meet Daisy. The little zombie snack is ridiculously cute. Mm.
But we miss you, Bree, and we know you'll be here on the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have fun.
Yes. Handle your mama business.
Hi, Summer. I just wanted to call and say hi. Tell you how much I like the show. I'm parking in the hood. We're in hella red right now, so if you hear something go down, please call the cops. All right. Well, I will be listening, so talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. Clearly that's your friend, so can you decipher the code for us?
Yes, he was, I was, because he just subscribed to the show. I've known him.
New listener! Woo!
I've known him for about like 13 years, but he just started listening to the show. And so I was like, you gotta leave a voicemail. He was like, fine, I'm pulling over right now to leave the voicemail. And I know, I saw him today and he was in all red, and we both work in the ghetto. We work in the hood. So he was pulled over in the ghetto leaving the voicemail, and I'm pretty sure that's why he was just like, if you hear anything, go now and call the police.
Oh my god, he's hella funny for that one.
But he's a great friend, and he's totally into horror movies, and
nice.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah. He sounds awesome.
He is awesome.
Right on. Well, welcome to the podcast, homie.
Yes, and keep listening.
Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. So that's basically it for listener mail. Again, I just want to say how much I freaking love getting messages from all of you guys, and I think that's something that my fellow ZGs agree with.
Oh yeah, we love it.
Okay, so thank you everyone for leaving messages. If you guys are inspired by the wonderful voicemails that we've gotten and messages that we read, then please feel free to send in some feedback of your own. Or if you were one of the people that sent in feedback this time, feel free to send some more. We can be reached on email at rachel@zombiegirls.com, summer@zombiegirls.com, and ariel@zombiegirls.com. So send us an email there. Or if you want to leave us a voicemail, we have a voicemail, obviously. You can reach us at 16786ZGirls or 16786947759. I don't know if I said that too fast. It's on the website, so Google it. Okay. All right, so let's move on to our new section. This is something that we're instituting. We're going to see how this works out. Obviously, we're all horror fans. Throughout our lives, we've watched a lot of scary movies. But the truth is, there's like a billion T horror movies out there. So obviously, we have some like holes in our horror watching, you know, resume or whatever you want to call it. And like, now that we're doing this podcast and we're reviewing movies, I feel like it's really important to fill in some of those gaps to give us the kind of perspective that we need to be able to really discuss and analyze horror films. Cause you know, this is such a heady analytical podcast. Plus this is also just an excuse to go and watch some more horror movies, which always open to. So we're going to start giving ourselves something kind of like homework. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but we're going to we're going to figure out films that we should have seen that we haven't seen and watch them, and then come back starting next podcast and talk about them a little bit. So I asked both Summer and Ariel to think of a movie that they're going to watch between now and episode 19. And we'll start with you, Ariel.
Okay, well, I think that I am going to watch Last House on the Left.
Ooh, because original or remake?
The original.
Of course.
Yeah, because it's one of those movies that I've kind of shied away from in the past, but so many people always talk about it, and I think it's sort of like one of those movies that you need to see and can make reference to later on when discussing other movies. So
yeah, you can't talk exploitation without having seen that.
Exactly. So while I'm not exactly like super psyched about seeing it, I think it's like necessary for my horror resume.
It's gonna be funny if you come away from that going like, that was the most beautiful, magnificent metaphor. I feel like a butterfly coming out of my horror-moving caterpillar. My eyes are open. You won't, but it'd be funny if you did.
Yeah.
How about you, Miss Summer?
Well, since it's like Halloween time, I think I'm definitely going to follow up on the Halloween movies. Like, I seen the original, and then I seen the second one that Rob Zombie did, which was crap.
I still can't believe that you went for that.
I can't believe I'm not even going to talk about that right now. Why I watched that, but I did. So I want to see the second one.
The second.
Following the original.
The original, like the John Carpenter Halloween 2.
That's the one I want
to
see.
Awesome. So that's a good place to go.
Yeah. And you have to, because it starts directly after the first one leaves. So they're kind of like one movie. You got to see the second one.
Sweet. So now, Lisa, I'm assuming someday you're going to be on the podcast again.
Sure, why not?
Did you have a good time?
I did.
Okay, good. Well, in that case, we can go ahead and give you some homework so that next time you're on the show, you'll have something to talk about.
Well, I think you should give me the homework because I know we always have conversations about horror movies and you're always like, what? You haven't seen that? So.
All right. So I'm trying to think what you need to see.
You should assign me something. Play this one
movie. You need to watch the rest of Dead Alive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was going to say
that's one. Okay, so your homework between now and the next time you're on the show, you need to watch Dead Alive because I think you'll get a total kick out of it. It's so much fun.
Ridiculous. I was laughing my ass off last time we were watching it, so.
Okay, that's it. That is your homework.
I have one for her, if you haven't seen it, is Night of the Comet.
Yeah, it's awesome. You can't go wrong with that. Okay.
All right, Rachel, and your homework.
My homework, I have some major holes in my movie watching. Like, yes. I've seen everything from, like, the 70s forward. I have not seen a lot of... Well, that's not everything. There's definitely some holes in there, too. Like, everything from Italy. But, so I'm going to go back in time. I've never seen any of the Universal horror, which I'm kind of ashamed to admit, but the truth is I haven't seen them. I just haven't. And so I'm going to be working through some, my goal is to get through some really great old horror movies. And I'm going to start with the Universal Monster. So my homework for this episode is the 1931 Frankenstein. So, Boris Karloff. So that's my homework for the next show.
You should watch The Bride of Frankenstein, too.
Yeah. That's totally going to be one of my homeworks. Yeah. I'm just going to work my way through all of those. Okay, so we're on to the very last section of the podcast. Because we had such an awesome guest who is doing such an awesome job, I wanted to go ahead and let her pick this week's Netflix streaming pick.
Oh, geez. What had we, like... Oh, yes. Okay. So my Netflix streaming pick is Carnival of Souls. I've heard that it was covered by...
MST3K.
Yeah. But I picked it before I knew that. So hopefully some of you can watch it without the irony. I mean, it's better to bring your own than to have, like, you know, a previous, you know, commentary running in your head. But I really like that movie. Don't watch it colorized. Watch it in the original black and white. There's a Criterion Collection edition of it, actually. But, you know.
I love Criterion.
Yeah.
They do such a wonderful job.
They do. And it was really, really, really wonderfully restored and everything. So hopefully the one that's on the Netflix streaming is similar to that. But it's just got a really great, you know, gritty, dark atmosphere with the black and white. If you've ever been the type to think that carnivals are creepy.
Fuck yes.
Carnival music is creepy. You know, it's got a female protagonist. She's basically, you know, she leaves her hometown. She's a organ player for a church. So she goes to this new town trying to find a job as an organ player in a church. And whenever she plays the organ, she gets like possessed. And it just sort of, like, follows her, you know, trying to, like, make a life in this new town. And everything is a little bit creepy. And, you know, there are people in her building who are kind of, like, lecherous. And I don't know. It's a good movie. It's creepy.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to read the Netflix description. And you tell me. But you know how Netflix can be.
Yeah.
They use the words
girl power to describe teeth, so.
Oh, dear. Did it really?
It really did.
I hate girl power. That needs to stricken. Like, they need to, what is that called when they come in and they, like, black stuff out?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
redacted.
Yes, it needs to be redacted from, like, everyone's mind. Okay, so here's the Netflix synopsis. Well, on her way to take a job as a church organist in Salt Lake City, Mary Henry, played by Candace Hillegoss, is haunted by a bizarre apparition. It compels her to an abandoned lakeside pavilion, beginning an eerie and macabre chain of events.
Hank Harvey's macabre macro. They like that word, huh? Masterpiece.
Macabre.
Is that how you say it? Macabre.
Macabre.
Masterpiece. Macabre. Masterpiece. While made on a modest budget, has gained a cult following on late night television. So
that by that it means MST3K.
Yeah, and I'd love me some MST3K.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Ignorant of that, which is weird because I like MST3K, but it's a good movie.
Awesome. Well, it's on Netflix streaming, so you can't really go. It's like you can't. The best thing about Netflix streaming is like there is zero buyer remorse.
Yep.
So just check it out.
It's a perfect movie to watch like on a rainy night when you know are just staying inside, have some tea. Snuggle up on the couch. It's one of those horror movies that's almost like soothing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like creepy. It's just creepy enough, but you know, I don't know.
Awesome. Well, good pick. I haven't seen it, so I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Awesome. Good. All right, so who wants to take us out tonight? Summer! us out.
Well, thank you everybody for listening, and please keep on listening. And I think we had a great show.
All right.
And thank you, Lisa, for coming. Thanks. And I hope you come back
soon.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun to have you on. Do you have anything you want to plug?
No.
Don't you have like a blog or anything that you want to plug?
No, not really anything active right now.
Okay.
Just been too busy in life.
Maybe sometime in the future. If you haven't checked out the episode of Horophilia that me and Rachel are on, please go check it out.
Definitely.
Horophilia episode 48.
Yep, all the clowns and sex offender talk you can take.
Yes. And Summer's boobs. Don't forget her boobs.
Oh, dear. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Twice a month, she has to stay till like all night counting ketchup packets.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, okay. Oh, God. I can only imagine what that laugh's going to sound like when I go back and hear it again.
My mom would be like, can't you just talk about something else besides vaginas? No.
There's blood-sucking cocks as well.
Ariel better watch out. It might
shoot
up
from your armpit.
Uh-oh. Ah!
I'll call Rachel and ask her what I want for my birthday. Don't worry. It's free.
Is he going to call me?
He was like, give me her number. I got to give him your number.
Do it. I gotta practice the song so I can just sing it to him. One.
And I want him to wear it on my birthday.
Cut a hole in the box, two. Put your junk in that box. Okay.
And he has to wear a box. On.
And those awesome suits that they wear.
So am I getting that for my birthday, Rachel?
Yeah.
Should have brought my beer bong.
Oh shit! I would have lost my mind.
You should have had the beer cap. You know.
So okay.
Should have brought my catheter.
See, you fit right in.
Hello, outtake. Like <numbers. laughs>